I'd like to call this Council and Committee meeting to order. Madam Clerk, the roll call, please.
Your Worship, all members of Council are present, save and except Councillor McDermott, who is absent for personal reasons.
Thank you. There are no announcements this evening. There is one addendum, and that relates to Report PDS 37-2016. There were a couple of pages, one incorrect page and one missing page to Appendix 2 of that report. So we now have pages, revised page 6 and additional page 7. Are there any disclosures of pecuniary interest this evening? Being none, there are no public notices. That takes us then to public meetings, and we have a public meeting this evening relative to the town-initiated amendment to our zoning bylaw with respect to fence regulations. This is a public meeting held pursuant to the Planning Act and relates to provisions relative to fences within the municipality. I'm going to hear from staff with respect to comments regarding the public meeting and the amendments that are proposed both to the comprehensive zoning bylaw and to the fence bylaw. And then I'll ask members of the public if there's anyone who wishes to provide us with comments or ask any questions. Since I saw Kira Dolch going up to the and oh my goodness, you're injured. Ms. Dolch is making you do that in the face of that serious injury. Well, I do hope that our workers' compensation is paid up. So, it's Denise, right?
Correct.
Denise Landry. Okay, then if you would proceed. And the other thing I can tell the councillors is our monitors aren't working. Apparently there are some technical difficulties, so you can I'll move over by to the ends and look up, or you can back.
Thank you, Your Worship. Town has initiated an amendment to the Comprehensive Zoning Bylaw 12990 and Fence Bylaw 70-2013 relating to the regulation of fences. Notification of the May 2, 2016 public meeting was provided in accordance with the requirements of the Planning Act by placing a notice in the April 7, 2016 edition of the Fort Erie Times newspaper. In addition, a number of measures were undertaken to notify the public of the proposed amendment, including posting on the town's website, posting on the town's Twitter and Facebook. A mailed notice was sent to the Ridgeway, Bridgeburg, and Crystal Beach BIA. Advertisement on the billboard at the corner of Municipal Center Drive and Garrison Road, and posting the amendment notice at the library branches and in the town atrium. Before I continue, please note, in your addendum packages, page 6 in Report PDS 37-2016, Appendix 2, has been replaced. The diagram depicting site triangle requirements has been revised to include the site triangle requirements proposed in the fence bylaw. I will begin by providing some background to the amendments and will follow with an overview of the proposed changes to the zoning bylaw 12990 and the fence bylaw 70-2013. In 2000, the first bylaw to regulate fences was passed. Prior to then, fence enclosures were only mentioned separately in the swimming pool bylaw. In 2013, provisions were added to the zoning bylaw to regulate the height, location, and appropriate materials for fences and privacy screens. This permitted the Committee of Adjustment the power to grant variances to the regulations for fences. Subsequently, the fence bylaw 150-08 was repealed and replaced by the current fence bylaw 70-2013 to be consistent with the fencing provisions in the zoning bylaw. In 2013, a bylaw enforcement fencing issue prompted staff to obtain an outside legal opinion on the regulation of fences. A number of concerns were raised by the solicitor, and it was concluded that the fencing provisions in the zoning bylaw should be removed, and that the fence bylaw should be the only regulatory tool for fences. To address the noted concerns and to provide clear rules in one process for amendment, administration, and enforcement of fencing regulations, staff is proposing to remove the fencing sections 6.54, 6.55, and 6.56 of the zoning bylaw. The mechanism to regulate fencing will remain with only the fence bylaw. The definition of site triangle is proposed to be revised to reflect section 6.31 of the zoning bylaw that has different site triangle requirements depending on the road classification of intersecting streets. The definitions of local, collector, and arterial roads have been added to reflect the terms in the town's official plan. To summarize, we are removing the fencing section from the zoning bylaw, and we are making a change to the definition of site triangle and adding road definitions. The mechanism for requesting relief from the fence bylaw is currently through the Committee of Adjustment. The removal of the fence provisions from the zoning bylaw removes the authority for the Committee of Adjustment to authorize minor variances to fence bylaw. A variance to the bylaw would now be through a request to the Director of Planning and Development Services, with appeals going to Council for review. A number of changes are proposed to align with the fencing provisions being removed from the zoning bylaw and to assist with providing clarity. The definitions of the three road classifications are proposed, including revising the definition to reflect the diagram in the fence bylaw. Special site triangle requirements are proposed, clarifying requirements by zone, proposing fence height requirements in the rear yard of a through lot, prohibiting the use of any sharp materials or objects that may be dangerous, setting out the process for seeking relief of the bylaw. To summarize, we are adding site triangle requirements, making a change to the definition of site triangle, and adding road definitions. Adding regulation for fence heights in the rear yard of a through lot, prohibiting the use of sharp materials or objects, and setting out the process for seeking relief of the bylaw. Staff will review and consider all comments received. A recommendation report will be brought forward to Council at a later date. This public meeting is to obtain the views and opinion of the area residents. This concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Landry. Do any members of Council have any questions of Ms. Landry at this point, just with respect to her presentation? Thank you. At this point, then, I'll ask if there's anyone in the audience who wishes to address Council with respect to the matter. Do you have any questions? Mr. Poole, please come forward. Could we have your name and address for the record?
Jim Poole, 3811, no sound, 3811 Redstock Road. Okay, the question I have is, are we saying what kind of type of fence you can put up? And what I mean by that is all of a sudden I notice the new thing in our area is they're taking pellets, you know what wooden pellets are, and they're using for fences now. I can show you a number of houses I'm thinking, is that got anything to do with this? You know what I'm saying, right?
What
type of material you always use for fencing?
Yeah, the essence of this is to basically take any references to fencing out of the comprehensive zoning bylaw, put it into a dedicated bylaw that already exists, a fence bylaw. So if there are issues relative to materials that can be utilized, that would be in the existing bylaw. And I don't know whether Ms. Dolch, you want to comment on that?
Is there anything, I don't know I know you're allowed to use wood and you're allowed to use wire, but wooden pellets seems kind of, you know, odd to me.
Well, seems odd to me as well.
From Crystal Beach, it's funny.
Maybe it's not odd to your neighbors. I don't know, Ms. Dolch.
Through you to the counselor. The only materials that are prohibited are the sharp fence materials. And barbed wire. So sharp fence materials are the only ones prohibited. So obviously pellets would be prohibited or are permitted.
Be permitted.
So.
Thank you. Is there anything else, Mr. Poole, or was that it? You heard the answer? Okay. there anyone else who wishes to address council or ask questions with respect to the proposed changes? There are none, then I'll declare this public meeting closed. And that takes us into planning and development services, and I'll hand the chair to Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. Planning and Development Services is now opened, and we are starting with a presentation from a delegate this evening, Mr. Jim Poole of 3811 Rudstock Road. And this is regarding concerns regarding stormwater management systems design, 3839 Rudstock Road. Good evening, Mr. Poole. Can you state your name and your address for the record, please?
James Poole, 3811 Rudstock Road.
And can you be sure to stay after your presentation so that if members of council have any questions, they can ask them of you?
Yes.
Thank you.
Let's get this. Okay. This presentation was, good evening, mayor's council staff and everybody here. I'd like everybody to please remember two numbers, 5 and 2. Now here's my presentation for 3839 Rudstock Road, pre-servicing subdivision agreement presentation, outline 2, 2nd of May 2016. Faith is the former resident of Fort Erie and reviewed all the west end of Ottawa development and projects since 2011 and helped the OMB appeals and came to Ottawa for the hearing, when I had the hearing back in OMB, I think it was last summer. She is quite qualified when she does this kind of stuff. Okay, we're on slide 2. This is a picture of the lot behind me, behind my shop, and Joey's house in the back, where they're trying to put a storm sewer and a swale and a sanitary sewer all in there in one spot, which I personally feel is not going to work. And I was looking at the plans today, and the swale in the back is over 100 feet long, and it only goes down 6 inches. To me, that's just going to be a place where the water is going to stand, and we're going to have all kinds of mosquitoes now. Page 2. Okay, well, I got over here. We appealed at the OMB. OMB wouldn't consider for me to do the draft plan what happened. I made a mistake when I appealed this. I didn't realize it was three different things, or I would appeal it, and we were in front of OMB, and they wouldn't let us to appeal the draft plan of the subdivision. So that's why we're in front of you right now. Accepted that it would be built. I accept that it will be built. I understand this is going ahead. I'm not against it. I don't want anybody to think I'm against this, but I want to make sure that nobody's getting flooded out on their property in the back, and the way this is set up, it's definitely going to happen. The new Ministry of Environment issued 2 approvals on April the 5th and 13th, duplicate the super pipe approved. The approval differs from the 2016 design. This is stuff that Faith has given me. Page 3. The council is now not being asked to approve the removal or change the draft conditions, which are not being met. Park Lane didn't try to obtain land wide the 4.57 corridor behind me and provide drainage outlet on the south. Now, what that is, in the south of this property, we'll go on the east. From the east, it runs all the way down the side. There's going to be a swale. And then behind the property, 300-some feet, there's going to be a swale, and they're putting a pipe in. Fine. It's great. But guess what? The pipe doesn't go nowhere. They didn't go and talk to the neighbors or say, oh, can I purchase some property or get an easement or something so they can run this water from the back of this property out to Brunswick Avenue or Ridgeway Road. There's 2 outlets. And what happened, well, I'm talking about this right now, I went and talked to all my neighbors on Saturday, and I talked to a gentleman, his name is Joe. I never met him before. He's been here a year and a half, and he never knew a subdivision was going in here. And he wanted to get put a garage in his backyard. He says, the town says he's got to make a survey, he's got to check the height of his property, this and that, and it's going to cost him $6,000. And I said, okay. I said, now you got behind you, they're going to run all the water over your lawn, which is not right. I said, if they come and approach you and he says, okay, I want to put a variance or something to come through your property. He said, for something reasonable, he says, I would do it. And to me, I asked the guy on Saturday. This has been going on for 3 years. I don't understand why Park Lane Homes hasn't gone around, whoever's handling it for him, has asked these people, we're going to have a problem. And as I read this, you'll see I'm getting ahead of myself, but I'm slide four. We're talking about drainage now. And there's high flooding in this property. And to give an example, we had a hole put in the back on Friday, Saturday. The water was 16 inches from the sod. Today, it was 2 inches above. Now, if you're not putting an outlet, if the water is going to stand the way today, we haven't started construction, we know we have a problem. Okay. Going to four. Okay, five. Park Lane revised the design when major changes were made. Design for a normal sewer and super pipe is not a normal sewer. It's a SWM, whatever that is. I have no idea. Six. I'll go back to five for a second. You guys, I guess, there's a prime example. If everybody look at the screen up there, or if your pads are working, I don't know if they're working in front of you, but you look at the screen, how much that drops. We went and read today, that dropped 17 feet from the road in the front to the back. Now, anybody knows you're going to drop something 17 feet. Where's the water going to go? We have no outlet. Excellent. Okay, I got comprehensive with other super pipes installed. Other similar size sites have much larger super pipes and store a 100-year flow. The 2013 design was for a 30-minute, 5-year storm. Others are designed for a 3-hour storm. The 9th and June 10th, 2005 storm that we had was a 5-hour, 150-year storm. Okay, proposed design. The swales on the west and the south side are designed for water to go back uphill. If you look closely, it doesn't make sense. Foundations, I did look at it. She says the foundations are not supposed to go in the storm sewers. I did read it. I didn't see where Park Lanes was going to put the sump pumps in the storm sewers. Okay, so we got the super pipe flows. That's a MOE. It's a 250 millimeter storm sewer inlet and a 300 millimeter inlets. Like I said, it's all technical stuff. And most subdivisions in this town have a pond. And there's no room on this property for a pond, so they come up with this idea of putting this big pipe under the ground, and they're going to have a little pipe on the end to hold the water back, and we're going to hope it's going to work. And it might work on a piece of property that doesn't go down 17 feet, but this to me, I'm not an engineer, but I can't see it working. Okay, the south side, if you were looking at the original plans, I have it, you look over there, you can see some place they're putting a 4-inch pipe across the back to take the water, for the water to go somewhere. They got catch basins and they got a 4-inch pipe. In some places you actually look, the pipe is above the ground. I've been living here for 26 years. I have a problem in the wintertime when my pipes freeze. I have stuff around my house and I have 6-inch and I have problems with freezing. If I don't take cardboards and cover up my manholes and stuff, in the wintertime it freezes. Well, it's going to freeze here. It's basically the pipe is on the surface. And like I said, the water was only 16 inches down. And I see another mistake, which I couldn't believe when I was reading, and even Faith didn't catch it. It says it'd be 100 millimeter pipe, which is 4-inch. It says non-perforated with a sock on it. If anybody knows any about pipe, the pipe's supposed to be perforated and it's supposed to have a sock on it. Now, if this is passed by council, the contractor comes in, he can't change what's on that print. It says non-perforated, and it's supposed to be perforated. And where the water is going, I have no idea, but I shouldn't find mistakes on like this. This has been in front of the town for almost 3 years. Driveway easements. Oh, yeah, the driveway easements. The easement between the two homes. There is a lot of unanswered questions. Like, are those people that are buying the homes, are they owning the easement? Where can they put their fences? I have an example. When I talked to Matt Kernahan last year about this, he told me there's no, in an easement that even the eave trough of the house cannot go over the easement area. On the one side, on the east side, you'll see the easement where it's right to the house. And to me, I don't, unless somebody's saying something wrong, this is not right. If you haven't got room, you haven't got room. On this one. Service chorus swell. Ministry of Environment approved a quarter swale of 350 liters in a south downstream outlet bypass, orifice control. It's all stuff like I don't understand myself, and I faith and science tell me that it's too small. Now, this is the swale I'm talking between myself and Joey in the back, and it's over 100 feet long, and it only goes down 6 inches. And I know I said it before, but it doesn't even make sense. And I was looking at, and I got to agree that when this is put in, my neighbor in the back, he used to have a little bit of problem, but he's got, his house was kind of hooked to the storm sewer years ago when his mother lived there. And he doesn't really have a water problem, but when this goes in, he's going to have a water problem. There's no way that his yard's going to take this water away. So, 13, I'm requesting the council delay the subdivision agreement and pre-surveys approval decision until the following have been done. That the SWM design has been revised and reviewed by the town's water resource engineer, as well as the regional and the NPCA, considering the problems identified and the information in geography and hydraulical reports. An analysis of the downstream area has been done to confirm their capacity. Change to the draft conditions identified council to approve. A special provision has been added to identify the PDS 38-2013 comment. In addition, I'm requesting the council to follow up for the following requirements. Requiring Park Lane to move Block 1 and Block 6 townhouses south of the 1.5 revised zoning bylaw reduction of the 6.7 meters. I think what she's talking about, what happened is that when they did this subdivision, they didn't realize that they had to get 1.5 meters up the front, because anybody in Rebstock Road, when they sever their property, they have to get 1.5 meters to the town for widening the road in the future. It's happened just down the street, and I can show you multiple houses it's happened to, and that's what she's talking about. And preventing this from happening to at other sites by requiring all reports relating to SMW to provide a prior initial approval in sufficient details to identify site servicing problems, as done in other municipalities and required by the Planning Act, Section 5124, and premature the public interest, flood control, adjacent property, and stuff like that. Now, I put something together myself, just a couple words here. This is like putting two football fields together. It's almost the same size, a little longer. So you basically what you're doing is taking two football fields, putting them together, you're covering it up with 75% with roads, driveways, houses, patios, and then you take it and then you raise it up 17 feet on the end. So just think about it. You've got this up 17 feet, and now you put a 4-inch pipe on the end of it and no outlet. There's no outlet for the water to go. And to me, I couldn't believe when I seen these plans. Currently, we're experiencing flooding in Crystal Beach, Thunder Bay, and Crescent Park. I know I have friends in Crystal Beach and Thunder Bay, and they complain all the time. And I used to live in Crescent Park. My sump pump never shut off, and I was on the higher end. To me, I don't know. I guess I don't know what I'm talking about. Anyways, getting back to the first thing I said, the previous council said, this is like trying to put 5 pounds of sugar in a 2-pound bag. And everybody was on council then. They know that's what was said. And that's what the council, it came to the council and they said the first time, and they gave it back to Park Lane Homes, and 3.5 years later, it's come back exactly the same, nothing has changed. What else I got here? Well, the other thing is, I was going through the town bylaws and stuff, and I see that it says that there will be no tree removal, grading or soil dispersion shall take place during the bird nesting season between May 1st and July 31st, in accordance with the Federal Migration Bird Convention Act of 1994, as determined by the town of Fort Erie. And the reason I'm bringing this up for, because Joey told me Peters was in there, the contractor was in there last Thursday, say he's ready to go in 2 weeks. And I don't know, I think it's past May 1st. And I know for a fact, I have Blue Jays come back every year, and they just showed up on Sunday. And I tried to get a picture of them today, and it's against the law to touch anything with Blue Jays' nest or move it. That's a $25,000 fine, 5 years in jail for touching a Blue Jays' nest and other species. Like I said, I talked to everybody in the back, and like I said, I talked about the test hole. So my presentation is over, so
Thank you, Mr. Poole. Are there any comments or questions from council? Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Poole, for presenting tonight and all the information you provided us. You referenced the OMB hearing that you had attended. You mentioned that you would have liked to have gone to the OMB for three separate distinct issues, but you were only allowed one because of the timing. What was the one issue that was at the OMB?
Okay, what happened is I'm new at this. And when we went to the council meeting that night, it was this, that, and this. And I didn't understand it. When it came in the paper, I went and appealed. I appealed something. And ended up being the rezoning of the property from institutional to residential. That's what I appealed. And if I knew I would have had to appeal the other stuff, I would have. And I say, and the whole, I hope you guys understand what happened. I did this, and I don't know nothing about this. But Faith, her sister lives across the street. She does this for a living. And she used to live right across the street, and she's got kind of, when was Green Gables? She was there, and she kind of got something to, and she contacted me, and how this is how this whole thing went. And I owned that property before. I could never cut the back of the field when it was like that. I just, nothing could do with it. And to me, if we don't have an outlet, there's a problem. And I know you were there, Steve, when I talked back in 3 years ago. I remember when I said, they could fix this problem real easy. All Park Lane had to go and buy that house next to Peter Shonrath's house, which is perfect location, put a single road in, 20 feet wide, like they have in the Prospect Point and Dominion Road, put condominiums in. You don't have 66 feet of pavement that we don't need. You'll have more green space. He doesn't have to ask for no variances. And now he's got an outlet. He can use Ridgeway Road, which is a lot bigger than it is back in Dover Court. And that's just my suggestion. I suggest that before, but
I'm just trying to narrow down, because one of the comments you made very early on in your presentation tonight was you don't have any issue with the plan. You just don't want it to be flooded. Have you changed your opinion from 3 years ago that you now accept the plan as it stands? Because at the end of your presentation, you then went back to say it's too many homes, shouldn't be done this way, not right. Where are we?
Where are we? I've been getting off council meetings. I realize that new subdivision that we got to put them in tight. And next door is not the tightest one I've seen. Like if he was going 4.5 meters at, I think I'd be at a half before. And I'm the only thing, and I think you realize, and Mr. Bray, my biggest complaint is it's too close to Rebstock Road. That's one of my biggest complaints, because that's sticking out a lot farther than my house. And like I said a couple months ago, I talked to you guys, when you change the rules, now you get sight of line the neighbor into infill. And to me, I got screwed on that, because it shouldn't be what's happening. But if he went to the plan I say, and I designed it, you can bring that down almost even with me, and he won't lose no homes.
But that ship has sailed, though.
Well, not yet it hasn't. He hasn't bought no property to drain this property unless you people are going to put something in.
I recognize that, but through you, Madam Chair, the appeals process has lapsed for that, right? We're talking about now site conditions, the drainage, so that's your concern now, is that you just don't want the property or adjacent properties to be flooded.
My property, that's exactly right.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Poole.
Thank you. Councillor Lubert?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Jim, thank you very much for coming out. I just a couple of things on here with your slideshow. On slide 3, you said that Park Lane didn't try to obtain the land to widen the 4.57 meter corridor or to provide a drainage outlet on the south side. So what you're saying is, with the drawings that you have, it shows that there's a swale on the south side, but nowhere for the water to go once it gets to the bottom of the subdivision. Is that what we got?
Well, I think you kind of realize, Don, what the bylaws were. They're supposed to have 10 meters. And then what happened, the town says, all right, they can't get it in. Let's give them 7.6 meters, 7 whatever it is, worked up to 25 feet. But then they said, well, they talked to me, and I wasn't interested in them on my property, and Joey says no. So then the town says, okay, 4.5 meters, and that's where we ended up. And to me, even the swale behind it doesn't bother me, but to run 100 feet and only drop 6 inches, I don't care how good you are, you can't put a ditch in that's going to be that good in that amount of space.
Yeah, but I think what I'm trying to get at is your drawings show that there's no outlet. Is that what Faith has told you?
Oh, okay, you? I think you misunderstood me. The swale behind me was actually behind my property. There is an outlet. The behind from right from the west side, right to almost where the super pipe is, which is not that wide, there's no outlet. And the reason for that is because Joey owns 10 feet going into their property, and the water would have to run uphill to get to drain on Repstock, on Dover Court. It would have to run uphill. So that's the problem they ran into. So that's why they just put catch basins in, and they end nowhere.
Okay, thanks. Did the developer come to you at all and ask you for an easement on your property?
Has anybody asked me?
To make the, you got that 4.57 meter corridor, and obviously that's not wide enough, so they're going to need an easement, I would assume. Did they approach you and ask you for an easement of your property?
No, they haven't, and I know for a fact because I talked to Joey. What happened is last Thursday, Peters came to his house. He says, okay, we're going to put the pipe in 2 weeks. He says, Joe, he says, can I use your property? He says, what do you mean? He says, well, we're going to have a tough time. Let me use your property, and I'll give you a free fence out of the deal. And I said, I talked to Joe. I said, Joe, they're putting the fence up anyways. So they're not getting nothing. And one other comment I want to make, you just brought up about that, Don, is that Faith was telling me they had a problem this in Ottawa. Same thing. The town knew they put the swales in, which is basically the town's responsible for them. And the people got flooded every year. And what do the people do? They go to small claims court because you can get up to $25,000. I'm not saying they get $25,000 every time, but every time they get flooded out, they take the town to small claims court, which virtually costs you nothing, and they're winning. Because why? Because the town knew there was a problem before they put the shovel in the ground and the property. And I, as a taxpayer, I know my neighbors are here, but I don't want to start paying them every year because the lawn furniture got wrecked or this got wrecked, and they can do it. And legally they can do it, and they don't have to go to the insurance company. And to me, this is, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but we'll see. Thank you.
Councillor Lubberts, do you have more questions?
Not right now. I'll save my questions now for when the report comes forward.
Any other comments, Your Worship?
I did have a couple of questions. Thanks, Mr. Poole, for all of this information. But what I didn't see in any of it was exactly what Ms. Blackear's credentials are. What qualifies her to provide us this information?
She's a researcher. Research librarian. She's been doing this since 2011, but she's done like a lot of stuff. But you must have seen she's already sent out letters to the region, to the, everybody already, for stuff that's been hasn't been done right. And she would know that stuff because she's handling stuff in Ottawa all the time. Over here, where people may be a little lax, and T wasn't crossed or I wasn't, you know, whatever. It's just a librarian, so they see it different than I do.
If I might, Madam Chair. Your slide, reference to slide 3 is what Councillor Lubberts was asking you about, and it's also referred to in the on page 3 of the slideshow about condition 21 and this obtaining of land to widen the 4.57 meter corridor.
Yeah.
I believe what you're suggesting is that that's a condition that was imposed and hasn't been met.
No, it hasn't been met. They were supposed to get 7.5, but it has not been met.
I see. And I had one other question. Just so I can roll this back a little bit and get a better understanding. At one time, you owned this property.
That's right. I owned it for probably only 3 years.
And you had plans, I think, of maybe something like a senior's residence or something like that.
The guy begged me for almost 2 years to buy that property off me, and I would not sell. It wasn't about the money. I wouldn't sell. And then he showed me what he was going to build, and it looked almost identical to my house. It was a Biwako on the two-story. And I said, Vince, if you're going to do that, I'll sell you my property. And I sold to him. And like what happened, he couldn't get the money. The government changed their funding on retirement homes. And then it all fell apart. And then he passed away. His sons got the property. And like I said, I try to buy the property, but I phoned the town a couple times, asked for different things. I phoned them and says, I want to buy the property next door to me. What do you want to do? Well, I want to put four homes in. It'll never happen. So I lay in bed, tell my wife next day, I phone up and say, I want to buy the property next door. She said, what do you want to do? I said, I want to put storage units in. It'll never happen. So it never happened.
Okay. I guess my question was, regardless, you knew that there was going to be some type of development there, and some type of development is going to create drainage issues.
Wait. My wife, myself, been looking out the window. That used to be like a park next door to me. Anybody and neighbors know that. It was like a park. And I cut it for free. And it doesn't matter. It's so bad looking now. The trees are down. The grass is high. He hasn't maintained that property. I'm ready for a fence, and I'm ready for some roofs on the outside. I hope this. You get the somebody gets this and goes ahead. I'm tired of looking over there. I really am. And I'm not against it. I don't want you people to think I'm against it. I'm not. I want it done right.
That's fair enough. I had one other question, Madam Chair, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to find it. Maybe you could just clarify this if I could. You made reference to a perforated pipe.
Okay.
With a sock, and what was that about?
Okay, what happened, the plans, the big plan that's going, we gave to Peters. It shows where he's going to dig, where he's going to put the pipes. The pipe that runs all the way across the backyard goes to drainage, Bob. What do they call it?
Here.
Whatever, it goes across the back.
There's the pipe there. It's making flow in two directions.
Here's the pipe right here. I'll show you. This pipe right here. It comes down both sides, a swale, into a pipe. If you look, the pipe, the arrows point this way, and the arrows point this way, in the end. They end in box. And that pipe is supposed to be perforated. If it doesn't hook into a storm sewer, you have to let it go in the ground. So you put little holes in the pipe. We all know what perforated pipe is, and you run it. But this is wrong. Like they run it like that way, but they made a mistake. If you look at the cross section right here, it says non-perforated pipe. To me, non-perforated, I always thought it was no holes. There's a mistake on here.
Okay, and so your point is that it should be perforated.
Absolutely. If there's no outlet. But if they hook to Brunswick Avenue, we don't want perforated. We want to run it. Well, maybe you do want perforated. When you think about it, you want to drain it. It still has to be perforated. That's right.
If I might, Madam Chair.
No, you got me confused now.
You're confused, and you're making me more confused.
No.
So that diagram shows non-perforated?
That's right, with the sock on the outside.
But you're concerned that it may be better if it was perforated.
Right. It should be perforated.
Depending on the circumstances.
But it's not going to help nothing. It's because, like I say, well, show the picture, the pictures. I'll show you one picture I took today of the backyard. And it'll show, no, that's not it. Wife says, you're putting pressure on her now. There you go, the first one. Up. That's good. Take it. Click it. He's used to the most. It worked a couple minutes ago.
Broken our equipment.
There we are. Well, okay, that's showing the finch next door. That was the wrong one. The birds just come back. Put the next one down. Like I say, this shouldn't be going forward because of bird season right now anyways. We're showing the bird again. But there's only one picture of the bird. There it is. There it is right now. And this is only roughly, I would say, 5 feet from the property line in the back. And that's today. And it didn't rain that much. We've had an exceptional dry winter. And where's that water going to go? And the other point is that if you look closely at these plans, my brother and myself looked at today, it goes back, it's a 17-foot drop. The road goes down 8 feet, and then when the cul-de-sac ends, that's a 9-foot drop to the backyard from the end of the cul-de-sac. And so the houses are walk-out base, but that's all that water's got to go somewhere. It's got no place to seep in the ground because it's going down too fast, downhill.
Can I just ask one other question? In reference to slide 7, your notes indicate that your commentary was that the swales on the west and south sides are designed for water to go back uphill. Well, you're talking about a 17-foot.
No, Faith was making the point is that when it comes down the west side, and it comes across the back on the south side. Okay, you know the south side of the property. What I'm showing that picture, the pipe is actually above the ground. If you look at the way that it's drawn up, because it's really, I don't know, level on level in the back. But that's what she's saying when water runs uphill, eh? And you got two of them meet together. You got one pipe coming this direction, another pipe coming this direction, and.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Poole. Unless there's anybody else? No? Thank you. Our next delegation is from Jason Schooley. He's the PEng for Upper Canada. He is a PEng with Upper Canada Planning and Engineering Limited, and it's regarding Park Lane Place subdivision. If you could state your name for the record, that would be great.
My name is Jason Schooley from Upper Canada Consultants. Our address is 261 Martindale Road, St. Thank you, Council, for allowing me to speak. Water resource engineer for 22 years practice. For 17 years. Water resources engineer, trained in that session. Sorry. Better?
You could speak up, yeah.
Okay. I'm a light speaker in front of people, sorry. I've constructed many super pipe situations, designed many. Also, I don't want to get into the details of that, but I'm really here to say that if council has any questions or anything like that about the design that we've prepared for Park Lane Homes, I'm here to answer those questions. I'm here to ensure that the town has a design that's going to be acceptable to the town, town staff, town council, and that this is a common practice of engineering. There is an outlet. We have a storm sewer outlet for the project. It's going to be underground. We have swales above ground in order to capture the water and convey it to the outlet. There is an outlet on Dover Court Road. The grade changes. Yes, there's 17 feet change in there. I'm really here just to answer any questions and any concerns that you have. We work with staff here at all times. So if you have any questions, I can answer them from our engineering perspective and if need be.
Thank you, Mr. Schooley. Are there any comments or questions from council? Councillor Passero and then Councillor Zanko.
I think the burning question in all the audience members' minds, perforated or non-perforated?
None.
Non-perforated.
No, it will be perforated. I'm sorry.
So is there a mistake on the drawing?
Yes. Okay. It's been corrected already.
So it's been corrected. Okay. Thank you.
Councillor Zanko? Oh, okay. Any other questions? Councillor Lubert?
Yes. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I've read the information that Mr. Poole's lady from Ottawa provided Faith. And one of the things that struck me was with the super pipes, she's indicating that when you do your calculations with the super pipe, you're supposed to use the 100-year event of rain event or something, and you were using the 2-year and 5-year events. Or, maybe you can clarify that, but that's what I got out of it, and it wasn't the 100-year event that was used in the calculation. Can you?
Yeah, I'd like to clarify that. As part of this site, the design that we've provided is we provided a 5-year design. The area was considered when the Dover, forgetting a street name.
Brunswick?
Pardon?
There's Brunswick and Dover Court that you're going
to be. Yes, Brunswick.
Yeah.
So when Brunswick Storm Sewer was designed, this area was considered under a equivalent runoff coefficient for like single family homes. So what we're doing is so the storm sewer was designed downstream of this development to take the water from the site. So what we've done is we've controlled it down to allow to that allotted discharge that would go into the Brunswick Storm Sewer through Dover Court. That was We did not do the 100-year design control because we've provided an overland flow route that has continued down Brunswick, Dovercourt, then Brunswick, and then down onto Lake Erie, so that as it would any other street, roadway, and anything like that. So that's why we didn't do the 100-year control, because we're conveying it down public road allowance overland rather than control it on site, as nothing else is controlled on the area.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. But when I was reading her face information, it clearly stated that if you're going to use the super pipe, then the 100-year flow rate needs to be used in the calculation. I understand what you're saying, but the super pipe is being used, and that's what her concern was from what I read. And I understand you're saying that there were some things with Brunswick and the system that they had in Brunswick and everything, but with her paperwork, and from what she is providing everybody, that leaves the question for me. And I'm saying, why eliminate it? Why not use that calculation? Would there be a problem using that flow rate in your calculation?
It's not necessary to do it for the 100-year event, because that is not what the control parameters or criteria were for the site. If you had to control for the 100-year event in a super pipe, that would be because that was one of the sets of criteria that you had to maintain the 100-year flows down to existing levels in some state. We're not doing that. We weren't required to do that for this situation. Other sites may require it, but not for this one.
All right. Just a couple more questions. When I read the information that we were provided, there was a geotechnical study that needed to be done and a hydrological study that needed to be done. It hasn't been done yet. And there was a lot of questions that were raised by Faith. And I just feel that to do our due diligence, it would be nice if they were answered. And because you have to do the geotechnical study and the hydrological study anyway, and it hasn't been done yet, do you see a problem with answering the questions and waiting for this pre-servicing request until your studies are done and presented, and then the answers to FACE concerns are addressed as well? Do you see a problem with that?
Many questions there in one statement. First, the geotechnical study has been ordered by Park Lane Homes to be conducted. The soils in the area are silty clays. The chance of sand seam here and there, but I'm not sure. We're not sure until we do that work. It is planned very shortly. Will it impact the development, the material soils in there? I don't suspect it will. But without a geotechnical, I wouldn't be able to comment, but I don't suspect it's typical. We've done developments in Fort Erie, Crystal Beach, everywhere in the area. We're familiar with what the grounds and the soils are like. So we don't suspect there'll be an issue here. In terms of, I think the last part of your question was that we should respond to Mr. Poole's questions. A lot of those questions were questions. I don't believe that council would require them to be answered, because you have staff here that are qualified to answer those questions to yourselves, and should let them, your qualified staff, answer those questions for you.
But I guess my last question was, would there be a problem? You say that the studies are coming forward and they've ordered the studies. Would there be a problem to wait until those studies are completed before you get your pre-servicing request? Do you see a problem with that?
Yes, I don't necessarily feel that the geotechnical study would change anything that's going to happen in terms of the design out there.
Yes, but we don't know that, right?
Not 100%.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Just one more question. Did you approach any of the property owners for easements?
I've been told that Parkland Homes approached the neighbors. As you can see, one of the neighbors wasn't very approachable. He was here tonight. So there may have been a hesitation there. I don't know.
Did they approach them for easements or just approach them to talk to them about the site?
I'm not there. I can't
All right,
say.
Okay. All right. I guess that's a question that will be asked during the when the report comes forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other comments, Your Worship?
What if I could just follow up on some of these questions. So one of the conditions is that there be a geotechnical and a hydrogeological study prepared. Those haven't been done yet.
No, they have not been done.
And there's also supposed to be a stormwater management plan. Has that been done?
Yes.
All right. So it's not necessary to have those two other reports in order to do a stormwater management plan.
Not for this particular site.
So would it be prudent to start doing site servicing work before you've got those studies completed?
As we said before, the geotechnical report really doesn't impact how the site's built in terms of the servicing of it. Because of how we're familiar with the soils in the area of this part of Fort Erie, we're confident that the servicing is not going to change based on the soils that are there, or even if there is rock.
I wonder if I could ask this question. What's the purpose of those reports then?
Good question.
Well, thank you for saying it's a good question, but do you have a good answer?
No, I don't, because one of the as many list of things we need to check off that are required as part of your subdivision guidelines.
So my question then to the staff would be, why do we even order request these?
Yes.
If I might, Mr. Schooley, can you explain then what an overland flow route is? You made reference to that in talking about why it's not necessary to do the 100-year flood criteria, and you can use the 5-year.
An overland flow route is, generally speaking, is a direct path of where water can flow, where there won't be any ponding during its flow process, excessive ponding. So like a good example of is a road, is an overland flow route. Continues down typically to an outlet, Lake Erie or something like that, creek. That's what it's overland, and it's for extreme events, your 1 in 100 year storm events, in order to make sure that everything is going to move without flooding anybody at the end of the day. You don't want these to breach and create flooding anywhere.
If I might, would that include ditches alongside roads?
100%.
Except
for not the culvert crossing the road.
Beg your pardon?
Not the culvert crossing the road. Ditch.
Okay, you somewhat lost me on that. Can you explain that?
Oh, the culvert is a pipe.
I get that.
So it's not an overland flow route.
I see, because it's under the ground. Okay, well, that's fair enough. If I might, Madam Chair, you're not suggesting that this water is going to exit from this property, go on to Dovercourt, and then just go down the road?
Overland flow will be. As overland flow would be coming down Brunswick Avenue from everybody's properties off their driveways, wherever it be in an extreme event, will carry down a roadway, Ridgeway Road, Reapstock, or anything like that. What we've done is we always design these subdivisions to have an overland flow route to an adequate outlet, i.e. a roadway that already exists, an outlet that exists out to Lake Erie, to ensure that we don't have a big pond in the low spot where all the water collects and then goes into people's houses.
But, Madam Chair, in terms of the stormwater management plan then, would there have been some inspection of the down route terrain to ensure that the flow would continue and that there would be...
Yes, there was a subwatershed study done by the town many years ago to ensure that it would be adequate for that area.
There was an issue raised about the possibility of water laying on the road, on the side of the road, and freezing. Is that something that we should be concerned about?
Not that I'm aware of. Not on this site.
Beg your pardon?
Not anywhere in this area that I'm aware of.
Because of the grade?
Yes.
I'm talking about beyond the property that is being developed. I'm talking now about Dover Court Road or perhaps...
I don't see any areas that would be of an issue, but I'm not very familiar with those. I don't go and study every road court area.
That's something that you weren't required to do as part of the stormwater management plan?
Correct.
Okay. If I might then, Madam Chair, just with respect to the swales, there were a couple of comments made about the swales. One, that there isn't adequate fall in the swale from, I think it goes from west to east on the south boundary of the property.
Yeah, I'm not really quite sure. I believe that swale is around 1%, which, given the length of it, would mean a lot more fall than 6 inches. Because if the swale is at 1%, then it for 120 feet. If you break it backwards for me, it's more in the range of 60.
Okay, you do have to speak up. So
there would be more fall than 6 inches, I believe, because I believe the swales will be designed and built at 1%, and over that distance it would be more in the range of, I'm trying to go from metric to imperial in my head, but it'd be in the range of a foot to 18 inches of fall instead, the 6 inches as suggested.
Is that part of the work that you would have done, or is that something that some other type of expert would have done?
That's part of the work that I would have done. I just haven't looked at the numbers to see exactly. But I do recall the swale being at 1%. Being over 120 feet, it should be over a foot to 18 inches.
Right. If I might, Madam Chair, aside from you, and aside from the town staff, is there anybody else that looks at this stormwater management plan or this super pipe proposal that you've put forth on behalf of the developer?
There's another engineer in our office that does a quality review of it, and then another technical person that does a quality review of the project also.
Is there anyone from the, we've heard that the Niagara Peninsula Conservation Authority takes a look at this?
Yes, they've looked at and approved it as part of the requirement. For even submission to the Ministry of Environment.
And the Ministry of Environment has an engineer that does that?
Can't comment on that.
Okay, I've seen the certificate of approval. It is an engineer. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Schooley.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me.
Thank you, Mr. Schooley. So that ends our presentations and delegations for this evening. We're moving on to reports, and we're going to start with PDS-36-2016 Animal Control Services Contract, which was postponed from the April 18, 2016 Council and Committee meeting. Can I have a mover for that, please? Thank you, Councillor Zanko. I believe that Acting CAO, Mr. Brady, would like to speak to this first.
Thank you, Councillor Butler. This matter was before Council 2 weeks ago, and at that time there were a number of questions raised, but in particular there were questions raised about the financials and the financial information that the SPCA had provided. There seemed to be a good deal of confusion on that topic, and that was reiterated in our local newspaper, and the town staff had received some of that financial information in advance of the meeting, but the SPCA had clearly identified that to be confidential. And because it was identified as confidential, it cannot be provided. We've gone back on the basis of that discussion, asked the SPCA to provide not only that information in a non-confidential fashion, but also to provide more information. That information is provided to Council, and there's been a number of packages that have been sent along. So what anyone would have read in the newspaper that staff had somehow not provided this information, I want to make it clear we can't provide information that's confidential, and that was not checked by the newspaper. Now there's a number of questions that I simply want to put on the record. The town has not ever asked for an EOI or an RFP for SPCA services in the past, and there's no policy to suggest that we would do that. It doesn't mean that the town staff is unwilling to ask for an EOI or an RFP for the SPCA services. We simply need the direction of council on that matter. A three-year contract has been the normal practice for the SPCA in the past. The SPCA has requested a five-year contract now. There has been some information provided to council on SPCA salaries. I think it's very clear that the salaries of the local SPCA are a bit lower in some respects, but when it comes to animal care technicians, they're significantly lower than the average. You now have that information, and it's public. And the staff has also provided a series of information on contracts about other SPCAs, and I think it's fair to say that the SPCA contract is very favorable in that it is the lowest annual amount of the ones that we could find, and it was one of the lowest in terms of a per population basis. The most direct comparison would be with Port Colborne. Port Colborne is an adjacent municipality. Their population base is considerably lower than Fort Erie's. The land mass is about the same size, and the SPCA there is the contract with them is about $17,000 higher. So that's the information that we've tried to bring together. A lot of it's been brought forward, and the report is now back on the table.
Thank you, Mr. Brady. Seeing that report is on the table, are there any comments or questions? Councillor Zanko?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through you, just wanted to comment to the SPCA board. You did provide a tremendous amount of information, and I very much appreciated all of the information, especially the comparison review that was provided from other locations. I could clearly see that the wages are quite a bit lower than our surrounding areas. And I possibly can direct this to Mr. Brady, he might know this, or Mr. Jansen. So the 1.5% over the next 5 years, just wanting to confirm that it's your intentions to bring those staff wages up to more of a competitive scale.
Mr. Jansen, would you like to answer that, or Mr. Brady?
Through you to Councillor Zanko. Clearly that's what the SPCA said, but I think the question should really be answered by the SPCA themselves, that their intention is to use it in this particular fashion.
Thank you, Mr. Brady. Wendy is coming up to the podium.
Our treasurer, Don St. Angelo.
Hi, Don.
Hi.
So if you could answer that question for Councillor Zanko?
Yes, absolutely. That was part of our plan. Absolutely. To raise the race, right?
Mm-hmm. And through you, Madam Chair, that's part of the plan for the three different positions, correct? And just one more question, Madam Chair. I believe that I've seen this, but I just wanted to confirm. Our previous contract with the SPCA board, was that a five-year term as well? 3 year. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other councillors?
Yeah, sure. Sorry, and just on that note, you are requesting a five-year contract this time. Is there any reasoning for that?
Just to simplify things, things aren't going to change. We felt in the next 5 years, we just thought it would be saving a lot of work and effort and to put it into a five-year.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Lubert?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Just to follow up on the wages, and maybe you can clarify this. I don't want to be confused with the fact that you have Humane Society work, and then you have animal control. And it was the animal control wages that are lower than the average. So these people, they're the ones that are doing the animal control work. And although they work for the SPCA, that's their role, is to take care of the animal control. Is that correct? Yes. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, sorry, Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through you to Mr. Brady, the contract total for this, the ask is for $747,079 over 5 years with their 1.5% built-in escalator. So, again, I'm just struggling with transparency as to why we didn't follow the procurement process. And it sounded from the last time this report was on the floor that we didn't even really send out an expression for interest. And from what Mr. Brady said tonight, it sounds like we never do. So I'm not 100% comfortable with the process. My constituents want clear, transparent government, and not following a procurement policy doesn't seem in step with that. The other question that I have for Wendy is, can you possibly in the future break out, thank you for the information, by the way, it was very helpful. And in the future, when presenting to council, is it possible that you could, in your spreadsheet that you sent to us, you had a shared animal services in there. Is it possible to break out the town's portion versus the Ontario SPCA's portion?
Oh, yes.
I feel that
and separate it as much as we possibly can.
Okay.
We've already put into play new forms. I don't know if you received that today.
Yeah.
The new form for your animal control report, it's very difficult. There is things that do blend together. It's like Saturday night we were out on an animal, Humane Society complaint. A dog was hit by a car. The owner refused to take to the vet. While we're there, we find out he has other animals that aren't licensed. Problems, they go together. And it's very hard to really nail it down, like, to the penny. But we're going to, Dawn, our treasurer, is going to put it in play financially. We're going to put it in play complaint-wise and that type of thing, what I did.
I thank you for that, and I think that'll help clarify and answer
I think
the
so
mayor's
too. I didn't realize it was,
question
it's
as to...
It's one,
the services we're
because
paying
one
for.
Goes with the other. If it's animal control, it runs into neglect. If it's neglect, it runs into animal control. It's two things, and a lot of times they're the same.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Your Worship.
I just had a few questions, and I did want to thank you for the in-depth information that you did provide, particularly the background that indicates the connection of the SPCA to the community, both through the work that you provide, the people that you employ, and the individuals that you contract with, both for work and for supplies. I'm still a little bit in a quandary, and the quandary is this. I'm looking at this simply as the town of Fort Erie purchasing a service. And the service that we're purchasing is animal control services. And I've been around long enough to have gone through this to know that at one point in time, the town of Fort Erie actually did consider looking for or going out for a request of interest. And I believe that, I'm not exactly sure if it was the city of Welland or whoever provided them with the service, but I think it was someone that did express some interest. But there were some reasons why, and I'll speak to those when I talk to the report. My question is, how do we know that 1.5% is connected to the service that we are wanting to buy? How do we know that your costs are going to go up 1.5% next year, the year after, the year after, the year after, the year after, when at this stage of the game, I'm not even sure that we're starting at the right number? That's what my issue has been all along, and we've had a number of conversations about this. How do we know that that's the number?
Fair question. Dr. King has done some hearing on that. He can.
And I'm Art King. I was president of the 40 SPCA for several years, and currently vice president. And my board tells me that I will be president as of.
Congratulations.
Martha's resigning, and I'll be back to president. And you, Mayor Reddy Kopp, and some of the other members will recall that Roy Pistorius and I negotiated several contracts over the past several years. The 1.5% is basically standard inflation. In our opinion, you'll expect that inflation is going to be approximately 1.5%. And part of that will be used for wages, which once again, Roy and I brought in a policy several years ago that when we recognized that our wages weren't in accordance or in line with other jurisdictions offering similar services, we follow our staff are not unionized, but we follow the wage increases that the town of Fort Erie gives to their employees and other unions as a guideline. I fully appreciate the whole issue of normally putting out expressions of interest or contracts. I worked for the federal government for 35 years. I'm involved with several other not-for-profit organizations at both the national and provincial level, so I fully understand that. I'd point out several things. First of all, there's an economy of scale benefit to both us and the as a service provider and to the town of Fort Erie in terms of the shared responsibilities. The service that we provide is quite specialized, and if a private individual wanted to apply for the contract, they would have to have a pound, and that pound has to be licensed and inspected by the government. And I can't imagine that you would give a contract to somebody that didn't have such a facility, and I can't imagine that somebody would build such a facility in anticipation of getting a contract. And I'd also point out that recently, for totally separate reasons, the City of St. Catharines recently did go with a private contract. The contractor is closely associated with the St. Catharines Humane Society, but it is a for-profit corporation that they set up, and the cost of that contract is $100,000 more under the new system than it was under the previous one. Because the services are not shared, and the service provider is for profit as opposed to nonprofit.
Thank you. Something's obviously burning.
Fire?
Mallets.
A hot topic.
So, wondering.
Do you want me to shut this off or something?
At her. Maybe that's why your laptops aren't working.
Yeah, I don't know, but I would ask staff to take a look at that. Check downstairs, perhaps. Why don't we continue on until we see some smoke? I've got.
I'm not putting this off any longer. We can wait.
I've got. And this is a night when the fire chief isn't here, so that doesn't help. I just wanted to go back to the length of the contract. Have you ever had a five-year contract?
I don't believe so.
So historically, it's been three-year contracts.
Yes.
Okay. And any views about? I know you'd prefer a five-year contract. Any views about a three-year contract? I
thought it would be easier for the town staff as well. We were just trying to make.
I have no other questions. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Your Worship. Any other questions or comments? Thank you very much. So the report is on the table. If you'd like to speak to the report.
I'd like to speak to the report.
Your Worship.
I very much appreciate the information that we've received and the comments that Dr. King has made and his information about the responsibility of the SPCA with respect to being a pound keeper. The facility that they have here really put them in a position where it would be very difficult for someone to compete on any economic basis and be able to provide the service that they do because they're in town and they've got the facilities here, and anyone that would want to compete with them would be at a disadvantage unless they were to construct a facility of that nature and make themselves accessible to the residents. So that's why this is somewhat a captive. We're a captive audience for this type of service. The amount of money that we're expending is fairly modest in terms of the scope of the work that they do. At one point, we were actually tying the monies that we pay to them into the license fees that they could generate, and it looked like we'd be able to maintain a fairly level playing field as we went forward. I see that there's been some very good increases in the fees, which is probably a tribute to the work that the SPCA has done in making sure that dogs have their licenses. I know that they've been refining that system as they've gone along, and we've obviously been paying a little bit more than we did a decade ago. I'm more inclined, and the 1.5%, I understand the pressures, particularly since we're looking at trying to do some social engineering by persuading them to increase the salaries, which is also good news because all of these employees are municipal residents. However, I'm more inclined to go with a 3-year contract for two reasons. Number one, just to make sure that some of our social engineering is actually taking place. And two, to give the SBCA an opportunity to break out some of the information that we've been looking for, and as Councillor Nutt makes reference to, a bit more transparent issue. It's a lot of money over 5 years, but you know, we've approved budgets far larger than this for the purchase of services, and maybe we could be doing something on transparency there as well. So I'm going to wait until other councillors speak, but that's kind of what I'm thinking. I'm thinking I might want to move that we should make this a 3-year contract. I have no problem with the 1.5% increase over those 3 years, but I'd like to hear what other councillors have.
Councillor Zanko?
Thank you. I would also support that. I think that the SPCA does a phenomenal job, and the amount of community work that they do, I do feel that it's of huge value to us. But with regard to this contract, I too agree with the mayor. I think I'd be much more comfortable with a 3-year term, and this way it would allow us to be more transparent, and it would also allow us to ensure that, you know, this is a competitive contract.
Thank you. Any other comments? Councillor Luberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm going to support the report, and I'll wait to see if the mayor brings forward his amendment. But just a comment on what the SPCA provides for the town of Fort Erie, and to look at some of the concerns from 2 weeks ago about sole sourcing, and some of the concerns about RFPs and not putting it out. If we look at what the SPCA does for the animal control, and that's what this contract is about, just animal control. If we were to put it out for RFP, like Mr. King says, the first thing that has to happen is there needs to be a pound. Or if there's an organization that has a pound and they're out of town, they may use that pound. But the problem that we find there is if your animal, your dog gets loose and it gets picked up by the animal control officer, it wouldn't be the SPCA then, that animal could possibly be taken out of town, and now the owner has to go out of town to pick up. And that's not what we're here for. We're here to provide the residents of the town of Fort Erie service for the animal control. And then going further into that, if you look at what else the SPCA does with the humane work that they do in this town, and then you look at their budget and their operating costs, is about $400,000, maybe a little more than $400,000 a year. So the animal control would be taken care of. But there's no guarantee that once the animal control is taken away from the SPCA, that the SPCA is going to stay in this town. Then what do? For the humane work that they do, and we know we're going to get a lot of complaints from the residents that the humane work isn't being done, and now we're going to have to contract that out as well. So I think we need to be a little careful on how this all works, and we need to be respectful of the amount of work that the SPCA does for this community, for their humane work. Another thing that's in the contract, and the animal control in the contract, from what I've been reading, is all about dogs and licensing dogs and dangerous dogs. Has nothing to do with the cats in the town of Fort Erie, which the Humane Society takes care of as humane work. It's not part of the animal control work. So, but it should be, in my opinion. So the sole sourcing is something that the SPCA provides. We don't have any other organization in this town that has the facility that the SPCA has. So in my opinion, I'm comfortable with the fact that we, and with staff, considering that this is a sole source for this animal control. And I'm going to support the report, and I'll wait to see if there's an amendment to it.
Councillor Passera.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the good work the SPCA does. I also appreciate that this was no small task to get us the numbers that Council asked for in a very short time frame. I just want to go on the record as stating for anybody listening or who will be reading this or anybody writing headlines that Council didn't request the numbers because we didn't believe the numbers. We just didn't have the numbers. And of the numbers that we did have, we just weren't really too confident in how they all came together. So if there's anybody out there for even 1 second that thinks we weren't confident in the information we were getting or that there was something untoward, that's absolutely not the case. We just felt that we didn't have enough of the information holistically from both sides to make an informed decision. I believe that we have that now. I was prepared tonight to approve the report as is, but having heard the comments from the SPCA that there would not be any negative aspect going from a 5 to a 3, should that amendment come forward, I will fully support that and look forward to the continued good work of the SPCA for our community for the next 3 years. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other comments or questions? I have a comment. I just want to make a comment with respect to what Councillor Lubberts had said. In fairness, we have never set a criteria to go out and look for other entities that may be in the area that could possibly be interested in doing this. I don't think that you can use a wide blanket statement that there isn't another entity that could handle this or could not handle this. I think it's disrespectful to the council to say that we have to be respectful of the SPCA in terms of you implying that we haven't been. So I think that we need to set the record straight. There isn't any one member on this council that hasn't shown you due respect and hasn't sung your praise. So I want to clarify that. I am also supporting this report, but I am supporting the mayor with his 3-year term. And I do want to also say that I think it would be in our best interest if we do in the future send out an expression for interest, not to take away from the SPCA, but to be transparent and to allow other entities that may be out there the opportunity to express themselves as well. Thank you. And Your Worship, you want to make a comment?
I did. As I said before, we in fact did put out an expression of interest probably a dozen years ago, and did get a couple of responses, but the ability of those organizations to actually meet what our requirements were wouldn't have been nearly as effective as the existing arrangement that we have. So it has been done, and maybe the reason it hasn't followed up is because it didn't generate fruit. However, we're not talking about that particular issue, at least I don't think tonight. What I would like to do is
But before you do, I just want to clarify that an email did come around to council from staff indicating that an expression of interest has never, ever been taken.
Well,
so that's what I'm going on is what the staff has provided to us for information. With
point of order, Madam Chair.
Excuse me.
Point of order. I think the rules of procedure states that if the chair wants to engage in the debate, that you have to give up the chair. So if you're going to engage in this debate with this year report, I would respectfully ask that you give up the chair. Thank you.
Everybody has spoken, so there is nobody to give up the chair to, but I appreciate that.
Madam
Thank
Chair,
you. And
you
I am,
won't
I
be
am
able to
finished.
Engage in the...
Mr. Councilor
Madam Lippert. Chair, point of order. You will not be able to engage
so
in
we will
the debate.
Turn it back over
okay, okay,
to
okay, okay.
Mayor Redekop. If you want to continue with yours, you're more than welcome to.
Right. So I'm, without putting too fine a point on this, none of the council was here a dozen, or none of the staff members were here a dozen years ago. I happen to be. In any event, I would like to move that we amend the recommendation from 5 years to 3 years. And I can just speak to that. As I said, I think that that's an appropriate period of time, and then we can see whether there is adequate progress in a couple of the things that we're looking for.
All right, that amendment is on the floor, so I'll call the question on the amendment to all those...
Debate.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are there any speakers to the amendment? Councillor Nutt?
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be supporting the Mayor's recommendation. As I said, you know, thank you very much for the additional information. It was helpful, and just if we could get a cleaner idea on what services we're purchasing, that would be fantastic. Moving forward, but it was a lot of information. I'd like to thank the SPCA for taking the time to bring it forward, and again, I'll just be supporting the Mayor's recommendation. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question on the amendment. All those in favor? That motion is carried. Any speakers to the motion as amended? Okay, I'll call that question as on the motion as amended. All those in favor? That motion is carried. Moving on to report PDS-37-2016, information report for an amendment to the town's comprehensive zoning bylaw number 129-90 and fence bylaw number 70-2013. Can I have a mover? Councillor Passero? That motion is on the floor. Would anybody like to speak to that, Your Worship?
I had a couple of questions, and first related to, I'm going to support this recommendation. I think it makes a lot of sense to have everything in one bylaw, and I think it also makes sense to delegate the initial request for changes to the Director of Planning Services. There's a reference in... Yeah, paragraph section 7.3, I guess, of the draft bylaw to a prescribed form. Do we have a prescribed form already, or is that something that will be prepared?
Mr. Brady?
Through you to Madam Chair, to the Mayor. The form itself hasn't been prepared as of yet, but once it is, I will send out a copy of it to Council.
Okay, and then just to go to the draft bylaw on page 17 of the sorry report, it's the definition for site triangle in section 2.1. Excuse me. It makes reference to a section 1.6 of the bylaw, but there isn't a section 1.6. So perhaps staff could take a look at that and make sure that they get the proper reference on that. Or it comes before us as a bylaw.
Mr. Brady?
Yes.
And then the other question that I had of a general nature, do we have any, there doesn't appear to be anything in the bylaw with respect to third-party signage, and by that I mean signs that are erected on a person's property that relate to someone else's business. That, how is that covered?
Ms. Dolch will...
Through you to the Mayor. That's regulated through the sign bylaw. So we have a separate sign bylaw for those types of signs, for business signs.
Oh, right. Yeah. Of course.
And if I can clarify, I know you mentioned the the reference 1.6. I know it's difficult to read because we have some red line changes, but it's actually 3.16, but because there was a 7 there.
I see. Which there is, which relates to site triangles. Thank you.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Councillor Nutt.
Hi. Through Madam Chair to Ms. Dolch, I had an inquiry from one of my constituents today just regarding, they were reading through the changes and they didn't see clearly where it's outlined the maximum height allowance of a fence on private property, on their own personal property. One of the residents is planning on erecting a fence and just want to know, they want to know what the maximum height is.
Dolch.
Thank you. Sure you do, the councillor. I did respond to your email, and the fence height, my understanding was he wanted to erect a fence in the rear yard. So the fence height in the rear yard is a maximum of 2.3 meters. And there is some illustrations, and again, in Appendix 1, you'll see some illustrations, and they clearly show the maximum fence heights in the rear yard. If they're in a side yard, it's again 2.3, and that's with the exception outside of a site triangle, a driveway triangle, or a through lot situation.
Any other questions or comments? Councillor Lubert.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Ms. Dolch, just to go to the slide show that was here, there was some mention in there about appeals would be dealt with by council. And I'm just wondering how that will work. Someone's going to have to appeal that at a council meeting, or would it not be better that we had like three members of council on an appeals committee or something for this type of thing? I don't know how this is all going to work, but it seems cumbersome to have an appeal at a regular council meeting.
Ms. Dolch.
Through you to the councillor. So what we're proposing is that it's similar to what we have in the sign bylaw right now. So the discretion is actually with the Director of Planning and Development Services. So if the applicant isn't satisfied with the decision of the director, the appeal body is council. So it would go to council if there was a disagreement between Mr. Brady's opinion and what they wanted to see happen.
Yes, I understand that. Would it be better if it was a committee of council, like a three-member committee, instead of having them at an actual council meeting?
We can look into that if you like. We were just mimicking the sign bylaw to make it consistent so that both bylaws are consistent, have a consistent approach to them, but we can examine that option if you
good.
Like.
Well, thank you. The reason I bring this up is in the last term of council, this defense issue came forward, and all the issues regarding the fences in the town of Fort Henry were dealt with by council. And we changed that because there were some problems with counselors being threatened and, you know, being talked to nasty and different things like that. So it was the decision to take it out of the hands of council and put it in the hands of our director or our staff. But now with the appeals, we're giving it back in the hands of council again, and we're right back to where we could have some problems. And I'm just wondering, I think it might be better that we have a three-member committee to make the appeals.
Only three of us can be threatened.
Yeah. if I may jump
thank
in
you,
on
Mr.
this.
Thank you, Mr. Brady.
I'm hopeful that there will be very few opportunities for council to have to deal with the appeals. I'm hopeful that most of the appeals will be dealt with by myself. However, we always believe that once in a while an appeal will be beyond that which staff can deal with effectively. So we want to have the backup as council. And I guess the people will be yelling at me instead.
Thank you. Any further comments or questions? Seeing none. Are there any other comments or questions? Then I'll call the question. All those in favor? Motion carried. That brings us to report number PDS-38-2016, Park Lane Place Subdivision Agreement and Pre-Servicing Approval, east of Ridgeway Road, south of Rebstock Road. Can I have a mover, please? Councillor Knutt, that report is on the table. Any comments or questions? Councillor Knutt.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Through yourself to Kelly Walsh. Kelly, you're the Director of Infrastructure. In the information that we were provided, the 2016 design says the superpipe will only be 12.2% full based on the five-year stormwater management plan. In your opinion, how does that extrapolate out to the 100-year rainfall?
It's a very technical question. I don't have the report in front of me. I can't answer that right now.
Is that information that you could possibly provide to council as a memo through you, Madam Chair?
It would be, but if the pipe is only 12% full, it would indicate to me that it's operating effectively.
Councillor Pizzero?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through you to staff, probably Mr. Walsh. The development from the drainage perspective and the concerns we heard tonight, does this development meet our town engineering as well as Ministry of Environment and Climate Change criteria?
Through you, Madam Chair. It does, and if I can just expand for a moment. When a development is first put on the table for consideration, there's a few meetings that are held between staff and the development engineer or the developer to get consensus on what the town is looking for in terms of design and responsibility and such. From that, the engineer goes away, develops a design. There's a lot of back and forth between staff and the engineer regarding review of the engineering design. It gets to a point where the town is satisfied that all of our conditions are met and the good of the town is being served. And from that point forward, it goes off to the Ministry of the Environment and Climate Change for final approval. And they sign off on it as well. Included in the staff review are intermediate agencies, the region, the Conservation Authority, who else would be... it fails me right now, but there's numerous agencies as well. So in short, yes, we are satisfied with the design.
I could, Madam Chair. One of the things that came up regarding the servicing design was the corridor, the servicing corridor. Are we satisfied that that's adequate, the current dimensions?
Again, yes, we are.
And the other topic that was mentioned several times was the overland flow routes. Are we satisfied from our internal engineering perspective or the other agencies that you've had consulted with? Are we satisfied with the routes that they've taken in those one and however many year storms as far as an overflow?
In through you, Madam Chair, yes, we are satisfied. The overland flow is a common occurrence in all stormwater management plans. Every new subdivision that's built these days has one identified in it.
Yeah. And also mentioned tonight a couple of times in the presentation was the mention of a storm scepter. Could you, one, explain exactly what that is, how it functions, and two, are we satisfied with the design, this particular piece of property?
Through you, Madam Chair, a storm scepter is a commercial piece of equipment. It's an oil and grit separator, and what it does is catches the first flushes of storm water off a road. They are that's the water that typically contains the most pollutants. It's trapped in the storm scepter. And occasionally the town will go in following the construction of development and clean these out. We have a number of them throughout town, and it's part of our routine maintenance.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Walsh.
Any other comments or questions? Councillor Zanko?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. I first wanted to say, Mr. Poole, I do very much appreciate the information you've provided us. I know you put a considerable amount of time into the reports that you had provided us this evening and for your delegations. I am going to be supporting this report as is tonight, and I just kind of wanted to give you a little bit of an understanding why I'm going to be supporting it. What I heard tonight is basically we've had, you know, six engineers at a minimum, including some town staff, various approval processes, approval from the Ministry of Environment, the Region Conservation Authority. So this does make me confident that drainage has been thoroughly reviewed. So I am going to be supporting this. But the one question that I actually do have through you, Madam Chair, to Mr. Walsh, some of the concerns Mr. Poole had said, well, he hopes that this doesn't happen. And I feel as though, I know he had indicated that his friend or colleague Faith is a librarian and a researcher, and she's been able to provide examples of where drainage issues have existed. I guess my question is there any type of assurance that you can provide to Mr. Poole that if in the very, very unlikely rare event there is an issue with flow and drainage, what type of solutions are we able to provide?
Mr. Walsh?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My apologies, Councillor Zanko. It's a very general question, and without getting into specifics of what the issue is, I can't really answer other than to say steps we would take would involve numerous property or people and businesses, the design engineer, the developer, to try and come up with an amicable solution that meets all parties' requirements.
I think you just one more thing. And I understand through you, Madam Chair, to Mr. Walsh, it's a very general question. I guess my point is, you know, if there are residents that are not confident with the engineers' reports, the experts, the various approvals that have come back and said that this is basically, you know, up to code and up to standard. I guess I'm just getting at that, you know, in the very, very unlikely event that there was some flow issues, the town wouldn't just say, well, that's just how it has to be. There would be some sort of solutions offered.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Councillor Lubert.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I guess my question would be to Mr. Walsh. Looking at the report, there was some discussion about units 4B and 5A, and I know we don't have everything in front of us immediately, but there were some easements that they talked about with 4B and 5A. Are those easements going to be in place when the properties are sold?
Mr. Walsh?
For you, Madam Chair, I'm not completely familiar with the numbering of the subdivision development. If I could defer that question to Mr. Korovar, he's at the stand right now. He is our, what's Jeremy's title?
Coordinator.
Thank you.
Through you to the councillor, your question was about the easements between 4A and 5B. That's if I heard it correctly.
4B and 5A.
4B and 5A. Yes, if you turn to Appendix 2 of your report, you'll see that there's Block 4 and Block 5 near the southeast corner of the property. That's right along that property line there. There will be an easement on either side of that property. Those easements will be registered subsequent to the plan being registered. So we get subdivision agreement, the subdivision plans registered, and then the easements will be conveyed to the town. So that'll be before any houses are built. They'll be in place before there's even any pipes in the ground, most likely, unless they pre-service, but early on.
All right, thank you very much. Now, there was some mention, too, in the report about things that are going to be included in the purchase and sale agreement. And one of the things in the purchase and sale agreement is to warn everybody that there may be some water problems in the event of a heavy rain event. And does that cause a problem down the road only being on a purchase and sale agreement?
Are you referring to a specific item on the appendix 4?
I think it was a draft plan of subdivision, the conditions of the draft plan. I think that there was something that they had to put on just on the purchase and sale agreement.
There is on appendix 4, number 6. It speaks to a clause on a purchase and sale agreement that roof downspouts and sump pumps are to discharge to the ground via splash pad and no direct connection to the storm sewer. So that's basically informing residents you can't connect your sump pumps straight into the storm sewer. It needs to flow over land. You can't connect your roof downspouts because you need to allow it an opportunity to percolate into the ground. Is that the one you're speaking to?
No, I think it was something to do with the fact that there would be some water. They may experience some water problems. And it might not be in here. Maybe it was in one of the things that Faith has sent us.
Through you, Madam Chair, to the Councillor, there's no requirement and there's no clause in the subdivision agreement that we've proposed that's warning about any stormwater problems.
Councillor Lubert?
Yes, thank you very much. In that same section there on section 12 of appendix 4, talks about the geotechnical and the hydrological report, or the studies.
Yeah.
And they will be filed before the agreement is signed. And
through you, Madam Chair, that is correct.
They'll have these, they haven't been filed yet, obviously, because they haven't been done, right?
That's correct.
So we can expect that to happen before this plan of subdivision is done.
Yes, that is correct.
I guess, Madam Chair, my next question is to do with other easements and the service corridor on Block 7 that I know of, and that's the south corner. That's the corridor for the sewers and storm sewer. And the four, I think it's 4.5 meters or something. And Mr. Poole had indicated that the town policy is 10 meters for servicing. And there are no easements to any of the property owners there for servicing. Is that correct?
To you, Madam Chair, that is correct. To provide some background on that, the original draft plan condition had asked for a service corridor of 7.57 meters, mm-hmm. but ideally 10.
Yes.
That was the desired width to be provided. When you look at the comments that were provided by staff that gave that condition, there's a little more information that speaks to that would be desirable. We would love to have 10 meters of space to put some sewers in there. In the instance that we cannot obtain additional easements to get that additional width, there was a request for a driveway access to that back corner. As we have heard, the easements have not been obtained. We've received some documentation from Park Lane Home that they've tried to get some and they cannot get them. So we looked at the potential for an access driveway, which was to go from the end of the cul-de-sac on the new cul-de-sac down the side of the hill. And as you heard from Mr. Poole, I believe it's about a drop about 9 feet. As we were reviewing the detailed design, we found it was impractical to require a driveway across easements that's on private property. And also, in order to maintain those pipes, we have the easements. And if we needed to flush those pipes, flusher trucks have hoses that can stretch a lot farther than the depth of those lots in order to clean those pipes out. So it's determined through myself and corresponding with other staff that a driveway was not required. So therefore, we're back to the 4.5 meters, excuse me, and we've agreed, and also with discussions with the design engineer, that 4.5 meters is adequate, as Mr. Walsh has indicated already in response to another councillor's question.
So now that would follow through with any other subdivision that we put in the town, that the 4.5 meters would be adequate for servicing
our standard easement width is 3 meters. So in this case, there's two pipes. We would have loved to have more space. However, after reviewing the design, we're comfortable that 4.5 meters is adequate. So in the case of another subdivision, if they came in and they said, we want to try to squeeze two pipes into here, and we saw they had tons of land, well, then we would ask for a minimum easement width to provide that. In this case, 4.5 meters is the land that's available, and we're comfortable with what's been proposed.
So, Mr. Cirillo, he lives on Dover Court, right in the corner in the back, in the south end. And he was approached by Mr. Peters, he says in his email, and they requested that he allow them to use his property when they're excavating to put this sewer and storm sewer in. And why would he need to work on Mr. Cirillo's property if 4.5 meters is adequate?
Through you, Madam Chair, to the councillor, 4.5 meters is adequate to build the sewer. We may need the contractor that's in place will be able to install trench boxes so that the excavation does not need to go any wider. The contractor may need to, as he's excavating, dump some of the excess soil onto Mr. Spirillo's property for a time in order to put the pipes in and then backfill. And it's very common, even with road reconstruction, that you might encroach into private property. And if that was the case, then the developer would be required to restore that property to what it was before, in this case, plant new grass for him.
So would that not be the case then if we had to, years down the road when we have to replace our waters and our storm sewers and regular sewers, wouldn't that be the same scenario? And now we have no easement.
Due to the councillor, we will own that service corridor. Block 7 is ours, what will be ours.
Mm-hmm.
So we will own that property. In the case we need to maintain that pipe, then we would do the same thing that Peter's Excavating did, is go and knock on the door of Mr. Spirillo or Mr. Poole and say, we may need to dump some excess soil on your property as we're excavating, but we'll be sure to restore whatever's damaged.
Wouldn't an easement be a better idea, though? That's where I'm going at.
Through you, Madam Chair, to the councillor, as I said, we would love to have additional space in an easement. But attempts have been made to obtain one, and if they haven't been able to obtain one.
Well, when Mr. Poole was here speaking, I asked him specifically if he had been approached by the developer for an easement on his property, and he was never approached.
Madam Chair, I can't speak to that. I have a letter from the developer saying that they've approached property owners to obtain an easement, and they haven't been able to get one. So that's what I have to go off of.
So I guess we're at a stalemate because Mr. Poole says that no one did, and obviously Mr. Cirillo, nobody's approached him because they're just asking him if they can damage his property while they're installing. So it doesn't sound like he was asked either, and that's where we need the easement to get to 7.5 meters or 7.46 meters. So maybe you could go back to them and ask if they will go back to the property owners and ask again so that we know, yes, definitely they were asked, because apparently they're saying they weren't.
Excuse me. Did you say something?
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I may add a comment to the easement conversation right now. If Peter's Excavating has approached any of the adjacent landowners regarding construction, that would be between Peters and the landowner. The town is comfortable that when we take over this this land and this development and the pipes underneath the ground, we're comfortable and confident that we can undertake any future maintenance, which includes replacement if necessary, within the required land. We won't be able to, we will not need to encroach onto other property. As Mr. Korovar stated, it's much easier if we do, but we don't feel we absolutely have to. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Walsh. So I guess if someone comes forward with a new plan of subdivision and they only, if they can only get to 4.5 meters, then that would be acceptable. Or if that's all they provide is a 4.5 meter service area, then that would be acceptable for all new subdivisions going forward. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that would be more than correct and more than adequate. Our standard easement is 3 meters. So if a developer wants to give us 4.57 meters, we'll take it.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. Any further questions, Councilor Lubert?
Yes, just one more question. The storm scepter.
Okay, you are dangerously close to expiring your time, so.
Oh, thank you very much. I'll try to make it as quick as possible. Maybe we can get an answer quicker than the question. The storm scepter, who will be maintaining that storm scepter, and will there be a maintenance schedule applied to it?
Madam Chair, the town, once primary services are accepted, the town will be maintaining the storm scepter, and it will be maintained as per the manufacturer's guidelines, along with any SOPs, standard operating procedures that we have developed through our experience.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh.
And will that that schedule, will that be provided to the homeowners in the subdivision? Because I think probably they're going to be the ones that are most affected.
Madam Chair, typically we don't provide maintenance schedules to homeowners. It's certainly available if they want it.
Thank you. Councillor Lubert, your time is up. Is there any other member? Thank you, Your Worship.
Thank you. I just want to go back to the question that I'd asked Mr. Schooley, and that's about the geotechnical and the hydrogeological studies. Why does the town of Fort Erie request those?
Through you, Madam Chair, to the Mayor. It's a typical question that we ask for all subdivisions. One, it's an information gatherer for they build a new subdivision in an area of town that we haven't done work for in a long time. We have an updated plan that is a resource for us. It also gives the developer an opportunity to identify if there's any anomalies with the site. As Mr. Schooley had indicated, he's fairly familiar with the geotechnical or the soils in this area. We have other geotechnical reports that have been done in this particular area that I've identified exactly what he said was sandy silt soil. So the reason we would ask also would be is if the so that the developer is clear on rock levels for basement excavations and things like that. It's a benefit to the developer to have a clear understanding also for soil capacities for their foundation designs and footings and things like that. So it's a win for us. It's a resource for us that we are able to get a better idea in that area what we're dealing with if we don't have a study, and then it's to the benefit of the developer for their designs for their homes.
If I might, Madam Chair, I would have thought that the developer, before wanting to do site work on the property, installing services as an example, would want to know what's exactly under the ground, because if you start digging and then find out that, oh, there is rock here, that's going to have an impact on this whole stormwater management plan, isn't it? Which hasn't been submitted yet, as I understand it.
Through you, Madam Chair, to the Mayor. On the second one first, and then I'll go to your first question. Yeah, a stormwater management plan was provided and reviewed by the town and by the MPCA back in October, actually. And then on the first question, wouldn't they like to know? Yeah, it would it'd be beneficial for them. However, as we said, we're fairly familiar with the soils in this particular case. And also it helps that usually the developers in this area try to use local contractors, and they have a pretty intimate knowledge of what they're dealing with underground. If there was a potential for rock in the area, I would imagine that the study would be done already. In the case of the South Coast Village subdivision down in Crystal Beach, there are all sorts of rock out there right now, and they knew that that's what they were looking for, so they had it done early on to know how much they were dealing with.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have any other questions, but I just have a couple of comments, if I might. So we did get a pile of information provided to us on behalf of Mr. Poole, and some of the information is accurate. Some of it, and parts of it that is accurate, our staff doesn't seem to have a problem with, and they've indicated that both through Mr. Schooley and from our staff that there have been a number of engineers that have looked at this plan. Not to minimize the comments made by Ms. Black here, because some of them seem to be quite erudite, but she's not an engineer, and I suppose when I'm sitting here trying to make a decision on what I should do, I have to look to the professionals who actually know something about stormwater management. It's possible that there could be problems with this system. But we're being told by every professional that has been consulted about this, including our own staff, that this pipe system should work, and that the developer should be authorized to proceed with some pre-servicing. The agreement, the subdivision agreement, won't be signed until the conditions that are outlined have been met, and that's pretty typical. That's what happens. So I have some sympathy for Mr. Poole, because I've got some concern about the off chance that this might not work, and ultimately we're going to be responsible for it. And this is an interesting piece of terrain with a fall of 17 feet from front to back. That's pretty challenging, I would think, in itself. I'm going to support the recommendations in this report, and fully knowing and having been cautioned about the possible problems that may arise, and I guess I'm going to have to take responsibility for that if worse comes to worse. And I want to make sure that Mr. Poole hears that, because if there's a problem, I'm pretty confident that I'm going to hear directly from him right away.
Thank you, Your Worship. Any other comments or questions? Councillor Lubert?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I just want to go back on one of the comments that Mayor Redekop made regarding the lady that provided the information to Mr. Poole. And when we got her first email, she did list her qualifications for commenting on stormwater management and water, the control of drainage and so forth. And she has been commenting for the City of Ottawa for years. And yes, I agree, she's not an engineer, but that doesn't take away from the fact that she can be very knowledgeable about stormwater management systems. And if she is very knowledgeable on one subject of engineering, definitely does not allow her to be an engineer. But over the period of time that she's been commenting, I think that she was more than qualified to comment, even though she wasn't an engineer. And I want to thank Mr. Poole for bringing that information forward. And I'd like to thank his friend from Ottawa for providing the information as well.
Thank you. Seeing that there's no further comments or questions, I'll call the question. All those in favor? That motion is carried. All those opposed? Motion is carried. That moves us to report number PDS-39-2016 Heritage Impact Assessment Policy. Can I have a mover? Thank you, Councillor Zanko. That report is now on the floor. Any comments or questions? Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to staff for putting this together for Council's perspective on this issue. I'm supporting the report tonight and the recommendation that nothing further be done. In going through it, I believe we're on the right track, and if we go back to the parcel and the discussion that prompted this conversation, and having read the report, I'm fully confident now, even more than I was back then, that our process was applied fairly and correctly. But I do appreciate staff's time in the preparation of this document. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your worship. I'm going to reluctantly support this. I say reluctantly because I'm maybe concerned about spilled milk, the spilled milk being all of the heritage buildings in this community that have been removed, destroyed, burned over the last 40 or 50 years. And there's not an awful lot left. And I'm concerned about how we make sure that we preserve heritage properties. This report at least outlines some of the pitfalls that may be encountered if we're overly zealous, although I don't know that Mr. Annunziata's request would constitute overzealousness. I'm just not sure about that. But in the conversation that I had with Mr. Brady about this prior to the meeting, he made some very good comments in terms of the Heritage Committee and how important their work is and how important it can be. And I believe that the staff has tried to support their work in terms of protecting heritage properties, designated properties, some that should be designated. And I have a feeling that we need to look at ways where we can further enhance the work that that committee does, perhaps find ways to more greatly involve that committee in some of the work that we do. So I think that there's some common sense in the report. I'm going to support it because of that, but I still have this unsettling feeling that there's more that we can do with respect to heritage properties.
Thank you, Your Worship. Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through you to Mr. Brady, in the report, it states that there are 18 buildings on the designated heritage list and that there are another 36 non-designated buildings to the registry that the town approved. What are the next steps for those 36 buildings, Mr. Brady?
Mr. Brady?
Should the, through the Councillor Nutt, should the Heritage Committee wish to upgrade the status of the ones that are on the registry, they need to do an evaluation of each of those buildings. That evaluation then needs to be reviewed and then brought to council. In all cases thus far, the town of Fort Erie, when a property is designated, we have always involved the landowner of the property in terms of the designation. So there should also be discussions with the actual landowner of the property. And we have not undertaken any hostile designations, which means that we've not designated property without having the landowner's agreement. So the Municipal Heritage Committee needs to do their work in terms of evaluating these buildings, and they also need to communicate that with the landowner of the property and hopefully come up with a resolution that they can bring to council and council can consider.
Thank you. Any other? Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple very quick comments as council's representative on the Museum and Cultural Heritage Committee. They do great work. They'd like to do more. It's at this point, it's a matter of some resources and some educational training opportunities. I'm fortunate that we did do a small increase to their budget during this round of 2016. But going forward, what we'd like to do is bring forward for council's consideration some additional funds to have those members trained. Mr. Brady spoke of the heritage evaluation process. It's not simplistic by any means, and it does take people that have a knack for it, that have a desire to do it, but have also received the training necessary to make it worthwhile. Otherwise, it's just filling out a spreadsheet that is not going to carry any weight at the end of the day. So I think it is the committee's desire during the next round of budget talks to come forward for $500 to $750. You know, it's a small amount so that we could send one, possibly two members away to a conference or for some training to get their passion to kind of match, or to get a skill set that matches the passion. Right now the passion is there, but we just don't have the skill set on the committee since the resignation of a couple of members to really make it worth their while to pursue this full force. So I hope to have council's commitment and appreciation when that does come forward for 2017.
Thank you, Councillor. Any other comments? Seeing none, I'll ask the question. All those in favor? Motion carried. That brings us to report PDS-40-2016, proposed zoning bylaw amendment 416 Washington Road, 800-547 Ontario Limited Park Lane Home Builders. Can I have a mover? Thank you, Your Worship. That report is now on the floor. Are there any questions or comments? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? Motion carried. Report number PDS-41-2016, Bay Beach Site Improvements Update. Can I have a mover? Councillor Passero. That report is now on the floor. Any questions or comments? Lubert.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering if we need some clarification on what staff has recommended here. I see we're accepting the report for information. And then are we going to be requested to accept option two, or is that, I mean, it's recommended that option two is available to us, but then in the first that, it says that that's exactly what we're going to do. So do we need to move that we put option two in place, or do we just...
Hansen?
Sure. Through you, Madam Chair. Staff have presented through this report three options that are available for consideration. We did recommend one of the options, and that is the second recommendation of the report. Under the alternative section, we do suggest that Council has the alternative of selecting either option one or option three as well. But staff are recommending option two.
So if we if we approve the report, then we're going for information, we're also approving option two as not information, as that's the way we're going to do it.
That is correct. Those are the two recommendations in front of you, is to accept the report for information purposes and also to accept staff's recommendation for option two.
Okay, thank you. I'll see if any other members of council have any questions.
Thank you. Any comments? Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Madam Chair. During the last term of council, I was very vocal. I thought the Lobster House should have been brought down at that time. That was staff's recommendation that it be brought down for very similar reasons due to structural, the amount of money it would take to renovate it, although at that time it was possibly a restaurant or another going concern, and that just wasn't going to happen. Staff had actually recommended that it be raised during the demolition of the snack bar components. I'm looking at the three options, and I appreciate staff's recommendation because I believe it's always staff's first and foremost obligation to bring us the one that fits within our budget, and this definitely does. But I'm also looking at the cost, and I really didn't have any issue with spending the $150,000, $175,000 to retrofit the current Lobster House, because it's the current Lobster House. It has some significance. And even that is debatable amongst some people, but to me it did have some significance. But to spend the same amount of money to recreate something that's similar just doesn't make sense to me from a pure taxpayer point of view. And I would lean on the clerk and his worship through the chair to help me. I don't know if by moving option 3, I am differing significantly enough that we would have to defeat the current recommendation and put an additional one on the floor, or if I could do that as an amendment. But that is my end goal, to end up possibly for council's consideration of option 3, the off-the-shelf pre-manufactured pavilion, and put the remaining funds back into the reserve. I also underscore that, knowing that due to the region's reevaluation of the LES program, we could possibly be on the hook for more of this project cost than we had originally anticipated. We are not on solid footing as we were a year ago when we were being told definite 50%, we can almost count on it. Things have changed, priorities have changed, and if we're going to be footing the bill for more of this than originally expected, I'd rather have that $65,000 to $115,000 back in the bank where we can pull it out for this project. So I'm not recommending we put it back into a general reserve. It would stay within the Bay Beach envelope pending future considerations, but I just don't see spending that kind of money on an open-air pavilion to look like something else. It just doesn't make sense to me. So through you, Madam Chair, what would be the best way to proceed with that? I don't want to move it now because I would like to give other councillors the opportunity to comment, but that is my end goal, that I would like to see at least that on the floor for discussion.
Thank you, Councillor Passero. We'll continue to hear comments and then we'll come back to you for that amendment if you'd like.
So just from my perspective, I think what we would need to do when we get to this, we should separate these, vote on each recommendation separately. If we defeat the second recommendation, then we would go to an amendment or a different option, because option 3 is significantly different than option 2. I don't think you can just amend that. Okay.
So would anyone, Councillor Nutt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through you to Mr. Brady. Further down in the report, it talks about the funding that the region is now requiring that there be a business case, and either maybe yourself or Ms. Hansen could answer this question, but it says staff are currently assessing the alternative for the preparation of the business case and will most likely seek the assistance of a consultant with relative experience pursuant to the town's purchasing policy. Was this not a component of the planning partnership that they include a business case? Because I remember last year, one of the things the council asked for was that this be taken off the taxpayer, that this whole plan be made to be cost neutral so that we would not have to levy taxes, or that it be done through land sales and parking increases, et cetera, and that the operation of the whole Bay Beach then come off the taxpayers and be a self-funded entity. I'd like to field that.
Through you, Madam Chair. That was included in the Bay Beach Master Plan. You are correct. The consultant looked at both solutions for a break-even operating of the facility, as well as how to construct the facility with various funding that was available to us. What we expect the new waterfront incentive program to require goes beyond what we looked at through the Bay Beach Master Plan. So it looks at the impacts of the site on regional economic prosperity. It looks at the impact of the site on creating new jobs. It looks at the impact of the site as significant public realm investment and private public partnerships. So it goes a bit beyond what we had looked at with respect to Bay Beach. With respect to Bay Beach, we were looking at the site, at the project, fairly self-contained in the impact on Crystal Beach. What we're expecting, we're going to have to argue that it has more of a regional impact. So we will use what we've prepared in the master plan as a basis, but we have to go a little bit beyond that.
Thank you. Councillor Nutt?
Thank you. I have a follow-up question based on what you just said now. A lot of what you just stated, I think, would fall under the purview of the economic development. Are there plans to engage them? Because I know that in the past they've run several models that address those very concerns, and to save the taxpayers additional dollars, I think that we should look at leveraging their expertise.
As the report says, we're looking at various options right now, so that could be one of the options that we look at.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions, comments?
I might. I know there's some concern about the region and their change in their waterfront funding programs, primarily driven by some communities that don't have lakefront but have riverfronts or creekfronts, and also driven by the desire of the current council to try to leverage monies that they invest in communities. I happen to think that this particular project at Bay Beach is a very good project that I think will fit well into their model, simply because it is going to generate economic activity. And we have taken a very prudent approach, I believe, in looking at rezoning and then selling part of the properties to the north of Erie Road in order to generate some even further economic activity. So I have no doubt that it will fill the criteria, and I have no doubt that we'll be able to put together a good business plan. I like Councillor Nutt's suggestion that we engage the EDTC, because they've got some expertise in this area, and I'm confident are looking for work to do. But I think that we can really do well there. I'm a little concerned that we would be looking to reduce our costs with respect to this facility in terms of the Lobster House. I did have a question of Ms. Hansen, if I might, Madam Chair, and that is, looking at the report and looking at the analysis relative to the three options, and in view of the comment that the Lobster House doesn't appear to have any particular significant heritage value, why would we be looking at tearing it down and then putting up a structure that somewhat reflects its architecture?
Through you, Madam Chair. I think that it was in recognition of the feedback that we received through the public consultation process, where although there hasn't been any architectural heritage value identified through this building, there were members of the community that I think had a connection to the building and wanted to see it saved if there was any way to do that. So that's why the consultants made an effort to save it, include it, and create a scenario where it could be refurbished as an open-air pavilion. So that would be the intent, is to, in recognition that there were members of the community or a number in the community who felt that it would be nice to keep that homage to Bay Beach. That's why we're, and it's similar to what was done in Ridgeway Village Square. We constructed a pavilion, I think it's for about $150,000, in Ridgeway Village Square, that's reflective of the railway station that was there at one time. So
somewhat of a reminder of what the property once was as we move into what it's going to be.
And the other aspect, or the other component of what was intended for the Lobster House, was to have a heritage wall along the back wall as part of the buffer to the neighbor, where we would tell the story of Bay Beach, not necessarily of the Crystal Beach Amusement Park, but the story of Bay Beach. And we recently met with a community organization who has a number of signs and artifacts and photographs that they'd like to include in that. So that was the ideal location for that. I'm sure that could be accommodated in any of the options, but it just is a reflection of the heritage of the site.
Thank you. And I do hope that you'll speak to Tim Rebstock as well, who would have some firsthand memories of the property. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to support the report. I'm going to support both recommendations with respect to this.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Lubert.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm going to support the report as it is, and staff's recommendation on the Lobster House. I think staff gives a pretty good explanation of the change in the grant funding that might be available. And I think it's important that we allow the staff and the planning partnerships to move forward with the design and with the design of all the park and the actual details of the master plan. Moving off of option two and going to option three, you're almost saying, well, we're not going to get the funding. And I think that If there's a problem with the funding, this is something that can be addressed at that time. But I think the planning partnership and staff needs to know that, yes, this is where we're going. This is where we want to go. This is what was agreed upon from the beginning, and this is we move forward from there. If there's problems that arise in the future, then we can address those problems when they arise. But I don't know that I can support expecting that that problem is going to be there in the future, and then when it's not, now we got to go back to planning partnerships and make the change back to the original. The $150,000 to $200,000 is well within the budget that we put forward for Bay Beach, and I think that we should stay with option two and go forward with staff's recommendation. Thank you.
Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm always cognizant that taxpayer money is taxpayer money regardless of the level of government it's coming from. So even regional money is Fort Erie taxpayer money. They're the biggest piece of the pie. And I recognize that some residents have an attachment to the building, but we need to start speaking for all the taxpayers who are going to have to pay for these things. I won't be supporting the report, and should it be defeated, then I'll be moving option number three. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want a moment to consult with Madam Clerk. Okay, we have one more comment or question on the floor before we move forward, and that's with Councillor Lubberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. My question, I guess, would go to Mr. Jansen. During the budget deliberations, we discussed the Bay Beach project, and we approved a budget for the Bay Beach. Is that correct?
Mr. Jansen?
If you're referring to the capital part, yes, we did. It was a two-year plan.
Yes, thank you very much. And just a question to Ms. Hansen. Based on what was approved by council in that budget, this is where we're at today, and we're moving forward with a master plan for Bay Beach, and then we went to planning partnerships and we awarded them the tender to put together the actual details of the master plan. Is that correct?
Through you, Madam Chair, it is correct.
So now where we're at, and I'm hearing, you know, Councilor Passero come back and say, well, we have to look at our taxpayer dollars, and no matter where it comes from, it's still taxpayers' dollars. But that's when you should have done your due diligence back in January when you were doing your budgets. We approved it. And now what I'm hearing is, well, yeah, we approved it, but there may be a problem, so we're going to take the funding away. And I don't think that that's very prudent on us. The decision was already made. The money is there. It's budgeted. And Ms. Hansen and planning partnerships is within the budget of what they were going to do with the Lobster House. There will be no changes. And I don't see where we should be now taking away what we've already approved when there is absolutely no problem with what we were doing. We still hadn't had the funding from the previous funding source from the region. And now all they've done is they just combined two different funding sources together and changed the criteria. Staff's very confident. The mayor even says that he thinks that this is a great project. Doesn't see any problem with us getting the funding. And if we move option three, we could very well be back putting option two back on the table once we get the funding, which I'm confident that we will get as well. So I don't see any reason to remove option two tonight. If you want to come back later, if you don't get the funding and move option three, there's an option that we have. But I don't think that this is the time to do it. I think staff and planning partnerships needs to move forward with what we agreed to during budget deliberations and what we agreed to when we awarded the RFP.
Thank you, Councillor Lubberts. Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. During budget deliberations, we approved money to renovate the Lobster House into an open-air pavilion. That option no longer exists. Now it's a matter of how do we best spend taxpayer dollars to provide a facility on the site. And in my opinion, I won't be supporting the report because I believe that expending the same amount of dollars to get something that we were not originally anticipating, it is a different discussion. We can't just wait until later because we're looking at possibly a year from now. Designs have to be tendered. And even if we do get all of the money we're asking for, I would not even ever anticipate coming back and saying, let's add a second story, let's make it nicer. This is about what is the best for the taxpayers right now, given the situation that we're in and the options that exist. The option we originally voted on does no longer exist. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Passero. Your Worship.
Madam Chair, I'm going to move that we deal with the two recommendations in Report PDS 41 separately and vote on them separately. It's only two.
Okay, thank you. We will put the first, that Council receives report number PDS-41-2016 regarding the Bay Beach site improvements for information purposes on the floor for we're going to vote on first whether or not we're going to divide the two thats. All those in favor? All those opposed? Motion carried. So we're going to deal with the first that. Council receives report number PDS-41-2016 regarding the Bay Beach site improvements for information purposes. That is on the floor. Any comments or questions needed? I'll call the question. All those in favor? Motion carried. Second that is on the floor. Council supports the removal of the Lobster House due to its poor structural condition, subject to replacement with an open-air pavilion designed to replicate its architecture. That is on the floor. Any comments or questions?
Seeing none.
All the question. All those in favor? All those opposed? Motion to defeat. Is there anyone that wants to put a motion forward? Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move option number 3 on page 3 of 6 of the report, install an off-the-shelf pre-manufactured pavilion at a cost of approximately $85,000, and if it's possible, I'd like to amend that to an upset limit of $85,000.
Okay, that motion is on the floor with an amendment to the upset limit of $85,000. Are there any speakers to the amendment? Can we ask staff to comment on the price tag? Thank you, Ms. Hansen.
So when the planning partnership presented us with this issue, we asked them to present us with a series of options, and they presented us with the costs associated with the first two options, as well as we asked them to cost out a pre-manufactured pavilion. I can think of a very small version of this would be at Stevens Memorial Park. That's an option that we've installed lately. So I feel confident with the pricing. It's something that the planning partnership will stand behind in terms of putting a pavilion, constructing a pavilion that will accommodate community events and uses. We will have to look at installing a barrier wall along the back, consistent with the recommendation of the report, figure out how to do that. That's not normally part of one of these pavilions, but we'll look at that as a solution as well.
Your Worship?
I don't know, is Councillor Passero finished?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, seeing as if we're kind of tying in another element to the project that is being eliminated, I'm prepared to go up to 100,000 if that is enough to tie in that aspect for the wall, because I do think those privacy concerns are important, and I wouldn't want that to be lost. But I would leave that for consideration of my fellow colleagues.
Thank you, Your Worship.
Yeah, I don't know how we get an extra 15,000. I mean, do we have any idea what the extra cost would be?
Through you, Madam Chair, for a barrier wall? We don't. We haven't priced that separately at this time. We had intended with the lobster house to leave the back wall up. We had intended when we constructed a new facility or a new pavilion, likely out of wood, that it would be something we can construct. So we will have to check with the manufacturer. The pre-manufactured pavilions are metal usually. So we would consult with them in terms of what options are available. So I don't have pricing on that. It's probably reasonable considering the design of the structure, but we would have to check back with them.
So what would this do in terms of, if I might, Madam Chair, what does this do in terms of the visual graphics that have been circulated and that all the people that participated in all of the public meetings, what will this do? What will a off-the-shelf pre-manufactured pavilion look like in terms of those graphics?
Well, I did have images on the computer that's no longer here of what it could look like. I do have photocopies that I can pass around if council wants to see a few options. With respect to the community, we felt if there was something, a significant change in the master plan, such as reorganizing site elements, it's something we would need to go back to the community with. I think the planning partnership feels that this gets down to detailed design, and within detailed design, there is some acknowledgement that designs and details might change slightly. We will communicate this change on the town's website, and we can also email our list of 307 stakeholders if council wishes as well to make them aware.
Councillor Nutt?
Just a comment to Ms. Hansen. During the Christmas break, I was in the city of Chicago, and across the park from their main library, they have a heritage display for the city that's all done in metal. If I might make a recommendation, if you can go online and possibly check that out, because they actually had pictures of the construction of the park. They have fenced in gardens, like you walk through, and they were metal stanchions or walls, I guess, that had real photographs mounted inside them and sealed that were weatherproof, that
okay.
it looked very nice. And if I were to recommend, if we're looking at a metal pavilion, it might match up very nice along the privacy barrier.
Yep, we will look into that.
Thank you. Any other Councillor Lubberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. If I remember correctly, when Councillor Passero first brought this forward at the beginning of the debate, he mentioned option 3, and then that the remainder of the budget would still stay in the Bay Beach master plan and the Bay Beach budget. So I don't see that in this amendment, and I'm just wondering, or this option, and I'm wondering if that is going to be part of it, or if we need to make an amendment that the remainder of what was budgeted for the lobster house remain in the Bay Beach.
Where should I get that direction from, Mr. Brady?
Well,
through to Councillor Lubberts.
Well, point of order.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's a question by Councillor Lubberts of the mover of the motion, I believe.
Yes. Are we going to put that in the motion?
Intent is of the. I believe that was your intent.
That is my intent, but if we could ask Mr. Brady to comment as to the feasibility or how this project is kind of being looked at from a holistic perspective.
Thank you.
Through to the councillors. The budget is not changing. The budget is as was adopted by council, and certainly the ask that we'll have to the region will be the same, which will be the $850,000. So the money, the budget doesn't change at all, but obviously the pavilion itself will change. It will be something less expensive, and we intend, as we move through this process of the design of the site, to bring back further information to council, and we will keep you informed on other matters as well.
Thank you.
Yes, so just for clarification then, removing option two is not taking anything away from the budget that we approved. I just want that to be clear to everybody that's listening and to the people that participated in the consultation with the planning partnerships. Is that correct?
The budget has not changed.
Thank you. Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to clear things up then. I'll just go back to originally three as it's written, given the budget considerations and a cost of approximately $85,000. I know that staff have heard our concerns. I know they won't be choosing an open-air pavilion for $150,000, but 85 is the figure I see nodding heads from the balance of council are comfortable with. And if we do have to spend a little bit more on the wall, that will come out of the overall project cost. As Councillor Lubert's mentioned, the money is going back in there. But from my perspective, it doesn't mean if there's money left over at the end of the day that we're going to find a way to blow it somewhere. Like, this is a continual process every step of the way. And just because you budget money for something doesn't mean you spend it just because you've got some left at the end of the day. That's my mindset going through this process. So I will go back to three if I could. I'd like to move option three, install an off-the-shelf pre-manufactured pavilion at a cost of approximately $85,000.
Okay, thank you. Your Worship?
Just to follow up, I don't think that staff was intending that we should frivolously spend this money if we'd adopted option two. Since I voted in favor of option two, let me explain what my thinking was so that people at home aren't thinking that I'm willing to spend money. Well, then we're narrowing it down. So the point is, I believe that staff was trying to recommend that we maintain some type of atmosphere or environment with respect to this particular park that we're spending money on. And option two remained within the budget that we had approved. So I like that idea. I also like saving money. People will call me a cheap SO whatever on many counts, but I also think that this is going to be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for us, and that's why I supported option two. I'm quite willing to save money. I'm also hoping that we'll be able to generate some revenues aside from the region, aside from our sale of property. I'm looking for some community partners to come forward for some other aspects of this. So however we go forward, I hope that it's a first-rate development and something that we can all be proud of throughout the town, because the people that participated in this put in some good time, and it's a very good process. The TPP did a fantastic job. So I think it's important that we be frugal. I think it's also important that we recognize the importance of this particular project. Since I can't go back to option two, I guess I should support option three. So I'm going to do that with those comments.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, then I will call the question on the amendment. All those in favor? All those opposed? Motion is carried. Can we take a 5-minute break? 10-minute break? Okay. Thank you. We're taking a 10-minute break. All right. We're back. So we're going to go to PDS-42-2016 South End Ford Erie Neighborhood Secondary Plan Community Focus Group Selection Recommendation Report. Thank you, Your Worship. That report is on the floor. Any comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? Motion carried. Last report for the evening is PDS-43-2016, Parking Strategy in the Downtowns. Can I have a mover? Councillor Zanko? That report is now on the floor. Any comments or questions? Seeing none. Oh, Councillor Lubert.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Just for some clarification, the strategy that they're going to, it says they're going to ask for stakeholder input, and the discussions on the alternatives are going to be just the alternatives in on pages 5 and 6. Is that what we're looking at,
Mr. Brady?
Councilor Lubert, no, those are there to start the conversation. We're going to do is approach the three BIAs plus in the other downtowns, where they're not BIAs, groups that we can talk to, have those as discussion points, and then we'll be bringing back both the comments that we receive from our discussions, and then also some recommendations and for council. Now, they may look something like this, but there may be some ideas out there that we haven't thought of, and if that's the case, we'll incorporate them as well.
Yeah, that's where I was going. I just wanted to make sure that the stakeholders can request their own alternatives or give their own ideas, and that's obviously that'll be part of it. This is just talking points, what you're referring to on page 5 and 6. Thank you.
Any further questions, Councillor Lubert?
No, that's it for me.
Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? Motion carried. That brings us to new business and inquiries. Worship.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had an inquiry with respect to the issue raised by Mr. Poole in terms of the clearing of the trees at the Park Lane Place subdivision. And are there some restrictions that we can take some proactive steps in enforcing with respect to that?
Mr. Brady.
Through to Councilor, to the Mayor. We have standard conditions that the municipality has put in place and to help deal with songbirds and such the like. I believe it's normally when there's a forest as opposed to scattered trees, but I'm going to check on that tomorrow morning, and I'm going to let all of you know the application of that to this particular property.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if, in fact, it's applicable to this particular development, would the Director of Planning get in touch with the developer just to remind him of this, if it's applicable?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Any other new business or inquiries, Councillor Nutt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to make a request that moving forward, that in approval of the SPCA contract that we also put out an expression of interest 12 months prior to the contract ending.
Mr. Brady?
Through to the councillor. Staff has no issue with that. What I would suggest is that if council would like that to happen 24 months from now, that it would the best way, and I stand in the feet of the clerk, if you will, in this, is to put a recommendation on the floor and give us direction to do so, and it'll be recorded by the clerk, and it'll be dealt with.
Notice of motion, then.
I'll defer, and I'll speak to the clerk, and we'll decide on what the best way to proceed is.
Okay, thank you. Any other business inquiries? Councillor Lubert.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Just a question to the, I guess this would go to our clerk, on report PDS 38-2016 Park Lane Place. The first that. It mentions the a numbered company, and then it just says Park Lane Place. And I thought that we had made an agreement that numbered companies, we would identify the principals just for purposes of anybody, if anybody has a conflict of interest.
Before going forward, Madam Clerk, are we allowed to talk on something that's already been passed?
Well, I think he's talking about the principle with respect to identifying who's behind a corporation.
Through you, Madam Chair, I would take this as a general comment, but you should refrain from referring back to a report that's already been voted on, yes.
Thank you. Then I'll call point of order on this one. Councillor Knott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also wanted to bring up another item for inquiry. It's I was passing through the town campus this past week, and I noticed that there was a hockey tournament going on. There was a tremendous amount of litter in the parking lot, as well as some individuals conducting some behavior that isn't reflective of our town's values. And I know that looking ahead in the scheduling, there's another hockey tournament planned for this weekend. So I'd like to make a request to staff that we have a bylaw officer available to address any concerns that may arise with regards to litter in the parking lot on municipal grounds or other activities that are illegal.
Mr. Brady?
I'd like to ask a question before I answer this, if you don't mind. I take it this activity that you've reported is in the evening on a Friday or a Saturday, or is it during the day?
It occurred during the day, broad daylight, in close proximity to the entrance of the arena and the pathway to the skate park. There were parents with children around. There was beer cans strewn everywhere and some individuals that were drinking alcohol in the parking lot, plainly visible when I came through the parking lot.
Thank you for that clarification. I can certainly have bylaw take a look at that during the day, but I would advise that if you think that there are illegal activities that are going on in the parking lot, that you contact the police. Certainly drinking and those kinds of activities are best handled by the police, but our bylaw enforcement officers can also ask the police to attend.
Thank you. Any other inquiries? Councillor Lubert?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I guess my question again will be directed to the clerk. It's been requested on numerous occasions that whenever a report comes forward, if it's a numbered company, that we have the principals listed. And it appears, and it's quite obvious, that that's not happening on all the reports that come forward. And I'm just wondering if there's something that we might be able to do to make sure that numbered companies, the principals are listed.
Madam Clerk.
Through you, Madam Chair, I'd like to defer to the CAO, Acting CAO.
Mr. Brady.
We have in the past attempted to do that. This particular numbered company is owned by Park Lane Homes, and that is identified within the title. So Park Lane Homes is the owner of this particular numbered company. I don't believe you're suggesting that we need to identify all the people who are a part of the ownership of Park Lane Homes, but Park Lane Homes are the owners of this particular numbered company.
Your Worship.
Just speaking to this particular item, under list of stakeholders in the report that we dealt with before, there is an individual behind the numbered corporation, so it actually is referred to. I didn't violate any rules by referring to a report. I mean, the reality
I was going
is,
to call point of order, but you beat me.
I mean, the reality is, and with all due respect to the clerk, an issue was raised by a counselor, and it wasn't with the intention of trying to revisit any of the recommendations or the decision made by counsel. It was with respect to a collateral issue. I think the question was appropriate, but the answer is that the information is contained in the body of the report at the bottom of page one.
Well, thanks for your comment. Unfortunately, I agree with the clerk that if the precedent was set 2 weeks ago and it should be cut off for discussion, then we have to adhere to that. So that's what we're going to continue to do. Councilor Lubert.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm not referring to this year report at all. I'm just referring to a list of stakeholders or numbered companies in general. Now, if a numbered company is mentioned in, as a under the stakeholders, stakeholder doesn't necessarily mean that they're the principal. And I think when a numbered company is mentioned in any report that comes forward to council, the principal's name should be attached after the numbered company so that we understand who that is. Because it's not, I'm not trying to nitpick with staff and the clerk or anybody, but if there's a conflict of interest that arises through something, then there could be problems with a member of council speaking on the matter. And I think it's important that the principals be listed after the numbered company is put down in the report, not as a stakeholder.
Okay, thank you. Any other business inquiries? Seeing none, we'll go to the business status report. Any comments or questions with respect to that? Seeing none, I'll turn the chair over to you, Your Worship.
Thank you very much, Councillor Butler. That was easy. That takes us into Corporate and Community Services, Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Mayor Redekop. Corporate and Community Services is now in session. Two reports tonight. First up, CAO-05-LC-06-2016, an excerpt from the Land Matters of April 7, 2016. This was postponed from our CIC meeting of April 18th. Council had asked at that time for some additional information that has been provided by staff. The recommendation being brought back is at the request to explore the purchase and development of vacant land located at 2567 Stevensville Road be denied. I would first put it to my colleagues to ask if the memo provided by staff answered questions, the questions you had in mind, or if there was additional information you wanted right now.
I think we need to put this on the floor. So I'll move that.
Moved by Mayor Redekop. Comments or questions regarding the memo that was circulated? No comments or questions regarding the report and the recommendation? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, if this is accepted tonight and the request is denied, does that prevent Council from revisiting this at a later date? And the context of that is the memo provided outlined different development scenarios, pros and cons, some of which have not been enacted as of yet or had enough time on the market to maybe give us the desired outlook that we're hoping to achieve. So maybe give this some time to go by and bring it back if nothing happens. I just don't want to do something tonight that would prevent us from following through on this in the future.
To the chair, if I understand the issue correct, not being a member of Land Committee and the acting CEO can speak up also, this was a particular request from one individual that is being denied. So by that token, I suppose it could come back if another request was made from elsewhere.
This was a request that the municipality looked to purchase the property, and that was the context that Land Committee looked at it. So it's us as a body saying tonight, no, we are denying our opportunity to purchase this or our interest in purchasing this. I just want to make sure that should we have that interest in the future, we're still able to do that.
If you will, if I could, yes. If a request comes in at some point in time in the future and it comes to Land Committee, certainly Land Committee tends to look at what it's done in the past as part of its principles moving forward. But if there's some new information that was provided at that time, certainly it will be reexamined.
Councillor Luberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up on your question, I think it's in the rules of procedure that anything that's brought forward to a council can be brought twice in a one-year period, and maybe unless that has been removed from our rules of procedure when we did our changes, but maybe we can take a look at that and see if it's still there. If not, maybe we need to replace it. But I think now that it's been here, it can come up one more time in 1 year period. Am I correct with that, Madam Clerk? Or can we look into that?
We can look into that and respond back. It doesn't have any bearing on what we'll do tonight based on Mr. Brady's comments. So seeing no further comments or questions, the recommendation then that the request at this time be denied. All those in favor? That's carried. Second report, CS-07-2016, Water and Wastewater Rebates for Vacant Commercial Property. A mover for that report. Moved by Councillor Zanko. comments or questions to that report? I'll go with Mayor Redekop first, as he was the one who requested this be brought forward.
Thank you very much, Councilor Passero. This was correct, the subject of a notice of motion that was approved by council in terms of investigating this. And this has been a long-standing point of aggravation for one of our residents who sent me a lengthy email today after having read the report. He wasn't happy about the recommendations and felt that a couple of the aspects of the report really were unfortunate. I'll put it that way. The first one that he raised was the fact that hydro and gas utilities, when a building is vacant, not charge a rate. Their charges are discontinued. The second one was that he took exception to the comment by our staff that to the effect that this would be very difficult. They'd have to have additional resources to track the 80-whatever commercial properties, bearing in mind that if you've disconnected your service, it would be very easy to determine whether or not you're using water. If you've got a reading on your meter, then you're using water. And if you don't have a reading on your meter, then you're not using water. So he thought that that was a little, I think he felt it was insulting his intelligence. And to be perfectly honest with you, I didn't take that particular issue too seriously. What I was looking for, and I had a very long conversation with Grant Boutin about this last week, this whole report, before I had an opportunity to read it, and he was explaining some of the rationale with respect to this. And I told him that what I was really looking for and was interested in were policy reasons why we would do what we do or why we wouldn't do what we do. And I thought of a whole bunch of analogies, and I keep coming back to this visceral feeling that it's somehow not fair to be charging people for a service that they don't receive. Mine keeps getting confused by some of the other things that we do in terms of how we raise revenues as a municipality. As an example, we tax people, we've all heard this one, people who don't have children or older people whose children are long gone. They can't understand why they have to pay education tax. Well, there's a policy reason for that, because we all benefit from the education of our population. But then I thought, well, if I don't have a car, but I'm a property owner, I still have to pay for the road repairs and the resurfacing of the roads. And I guess we could go down the list and say, you know, it's not always fair. Look at the number of individuals who are non-residents who own properties in Fort Erie who pay the full shot of taxes, despite the fact that they only occupy their property part of the year, they don't send any of their children to our schools, and are really not a great drain on many of our resources, still of being, I guess, in the community. So I don't believe that the individual that raised this issue with me is going to be, I know he's not happy with how we're going to leave this. I'm going to support these recommendations, primarily on the basis of the policy, although I would hope that as we go forward, we can find efficiencies in all parts of our operation. To somewhat speak to Councillor Passero's comments before about us trying to be good stewards of our financial resources, that isn't going to address the inequity that some people feel exists within the water and sewer billing system, particularly for those people who don't occupy their properties part of the year, or for those individuals who have vacant properties. But the one policy issue that I keep thinking about is that we want individuals who have industrially zoned property or commercially zoned property to put those properties into play. We want those. That's one of the reasons why municipalities really don't like the idea of giving a tax rebate to commercial property owners who have vacant commercial land, because it's not putting that property into play. And it's the same thing to a lesser extent with respect to the water and sewer bill. We need this property in play. And if this encourages the commercial property owner to do that, I suppose that's a policy reason why we would not want to give rebates. I'm still uncomfortable. I agree with the individual who brought this forward that it doesn't seem fair. If it doesn't seem fair, then perhaps it's not fair. But I guess there's a lot of things that aren't fair, and I think this report outlines at least sound policy reasons why we would maintain what we're doing. There's a specific reference to the two municipalities in Niagara that do not charge base water and sewer rates when a commercial property is vacant. Those are St. Catharines and Niagara Falls. St. Catharines is has a very intense development within their community. Large number of, and we heard this during our budget deliberations, large number of services per kilometer, which we don't have. We're spread out all over the place. Niagara Falls has, to some extent, a bit of what we have, but they also have some very intense developed areas, urban areas, where they can generate a significant amount of revenues on a small number of pipes. We're more akin to Pelham, where I was today, driving around Pelham. I mean, they've got kilometers and kilometers of pipes. I mean, if you think we have it bad, I would think Pelham is in a real predicament. And there are some other large communities. West Lincoln, I'm sure, has something similar to what we have. So I'm going to support this. I am sensitive to what the resident who raised this with me is feeling. I'm sensitive to some of the other complaints that I hear by residential property owners, but I believe that we've got sound policy reasons for doing what we're doing, and so I'm going to support the recommendations here.
Thank you, Mayor Redekop. Further comments or questions? Councillor Liberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up on what the Mayor was saying, I've had numerous people discuss water and wastewater with me, and through the last term of council, it was a major issue. It took me 3 years to wrap my head around how we work the water and wastewater. I had a phone call this weekend, and a resident in Crystal Beach says, well, the problem is we don't charge enough for the water. We need to charge more for the water and less for the base rate. And I don't know if maybe that isn't a bad idea, but maybe that's an option that's there. But somewhere along the line, you have to balance. And maybe you can do it that way, but the town of Fort Erie elects to do it this way. And so I'm just wondering if it's possible that, just to follow up with what the mayor was saying, as our policy and the reasons why we do what we do or we don't do what some people might suggest we do, if there's something that we could put together as a policy for the town and then put it on our website so that we can refer people to a clear explanation as to why we handle our water and wastewater the way we do. And I wonder if that might be an option for staff to look at.
Thank you, Councillor Luberts. I know staff have heard that suggestion. Further comments or questions? That particular staff, yes. just one very quick comment I'd like to make is we struggle this. I think every council struggles with this, but it's a matter of paying in for the greater good of a system that has to be there when you need it. And although your residential, commercial, or industrial property might not be utilizing water, that's the same water that's flowing through our pipes into our fire hydrants. So do we now say that, well, you're not paying in for 4 months, your place is on fire, we're not going to utilize a resource you're not contributing to? Of course not. The system has to be there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, whether you're drawing on it or not. That's how the system's set up. We can't subsidize it from the general levy. It's a user pay system. We have to make sure it's there, whether it's turning on your tap tomorrow because the building sold, or unfortunately if something's on fire 3 weeks from now, it's a system we have to have. All those in favor of the report and recommendations? That carries. That is it for corporate and community services. Back to Mayor Redekop.
Thank you, Councillor Passero. Are there any meetings scheduled that anyone would like to raise? Councillor Zanko.
Thank you. We have a infrastructure service meeting on Wednesday, May the 4th, here at Town Hall in Conference Room 3, I believe, and that begins at 5 p.m. We also have a Court of Appeals or Court of Revision which is Wednesday, May 4th at 6 p.m. here in Town Chambers.
And Councillor Zanko, if I might, there are three people on that court of revision. Are all three of you available?
Yes, we are available.
You're off the hook.
Thank you. That's good news.
I believe so. I haven't heard back from Councillor Luberts, but...
He shook his head in the affirmative. Yes. Anything further, Councillor Zanko? Councillor Luberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Just to follow up on the court of revision and then the infrastructure meeting, I think with the court of revision, we were asked to be here at 5:30. And if we're going to have a meeting with infrastructure at 5, that's going to be too tight for me to work on.
Well, perhaps the clerk can at least give notification to... perhaps the clerk can give notification to those... No, I guess you won't know. Or do you know? No.
To your worship, I was just chatting quickly with Mr. Walsh, and we're thinking of maybe rescheduling the Traffic Coordinating Committee meeting to accommodate that.
Can I jump in?
There's a Traffic Coordinating...
Jump in?
Yes, please.
Mr. Mayor, it's not Traffic Coordinating Committee. It's Infrastructure Services Business Subcommittee. Traffic Coordinating Committee is on the agenda for discussion at the meeting. I think given the anticipated length of discussion or length of time of discussion on TCC, it may be prudent to say no. The Infrastructure Services Business Subcommittee to a date to be determined shortly.
All right. So no meeting on May the 4th is what you're suggesting?
That's what I'm suggesting.
Okay. Sit with the chair.
I'm going to take direction from the Director of Infrastructure on that, so that will be fine. Just to point out, I did confirm, though, prior to this, and Carla thought that we would be having enough time.
I took direction from the chair, the Director of Infrastructure Services once, I'm sorry to say. Okay, so...
It's probably best to reschedule, though.
Okay. Councillor Luberts, did you have any meetings that you wanted to announce? Councillor Passero, let me guess.
No, not yet.
Not party on the patio?
Yes, but first I'd like to announce a Senior Citizens Advisory Committee meeting tomorrow at 10 a.m. over at Douglas Heights, and would also like to mention that Wednesday is the annual McHappy Day to benefit Big Brothers Big Sisters at McDonald's, of course. No. I know that I'm participating, looking forward to it. It's the one time a year I go from McDonald's best customer to their worst employee. I know the mayor is coming as well.
I just want to know when you're going to be there, so I'm not.
we're at the same time, but I want people to know that you're at window one, you raid their pockets. I'm actually giving them something at window two, so just so that's clear to everybody.
Okay.
I just wanted to also mention before Councillor Luberts, we also have our party on the patio, Hollywood North Party on the Patio, coming up very quickly. You can see the organizers all sweating up here. May 14th, we're very, very happy to say that we've done extremely well with VIP tickets, $75 tickets, which includes a 5 p.m. beer and wine reception leading into a dinner. But we've also added, because of the demand, a general admission component. So tickets available at the door. The doors will open at 8 p.m. Cash bar and three really, really great bands. We have West Wind, the Mandevilles, and Guilty Pleasures. So if you're not able to join us for the VIP reception and dinner component, please just show up at the Leisure Plex Banquet Hall, 8 p.m. and on. It's going to run to 1 a.m., $10 tickets, best deal in town that night. We look forward to having you.
Thank you. Councillor Luberts.
Yes, thank you very much. Before I forget, this Saturday, May 7th, I believe we're having the opening kickoff for the Communities in Bloom.
That is correct.
And Councillor Butler will be emceeing, and you will be making some comments.
Be there.
And I don't know.
That starts at 9 o'clock, I believe.
Yeah, I think that starts at 9 o'clock Saturday, this Saturday.
What happened to Stevie Shrub?
But Frankie Flower will be there.
His brother.
His brother. Okay.
And that's at the Leisure Plex.
Right. Councillor Butler, did you have any meetings?
Just on Wednesday, May 4th, I believe at 5:15 at the Ridgeway Legion for the Ridgeway BIA.
That's a busy day. If there aren't any others, Councillor Nutt, motion to adjourn.
Thank you, Your Worship. I'd also like to point out that McHappy Day is also falling on Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you. The Counseling Committee for the Town of Fort Erie hereby adjourns at 9:28 p.m. to resume in regular council on May 9th at 6 p.m.
All those in favor? Carried. Thank you.